Prepare yourselves for Ethan and Aaron's Confessions of a Movie Snob, the ongoing discussion of film genres.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Aaron. With me as always is Ethan.
Hello.
And back by popular demand is young master Noah Gibbs. Say hello, Noah.
Hi, wait. People actually asked to have me back?
Well, we only got one email, and it was from you.
Yeah. So, well, by popular demand, I meant that, like, it took us a couple of weeks to get you back on, so yeah. We had to demand it out of you, so.
Oh, okay.
So, go ahead, but it's all right. You're the one, like, deflating your balloon, so keep it up.
You'll learn very easily. I'm very self-critical.
Yeah. You're not the only one. You're not the only one. But we, too, are also very critical, and we are critical about movies. And what we've been doing is this is just an ongoing discussion of film genres. Tonight we're going to be covering Mr. Noah's choice of fantasy films, which is going to be a very interesting discussion because they always are, quite frankly.
Yeah, and those people who have actually listened to our previous episodes might remember that when he was on last, there was talk about doing a samurai episode.
And
after some reflection on that, you know, some of us determined that we had only seen a handful of samurai films.
I've seen enough to populate a list, but...
Yes, I might have seen enough to populate a list, but...
It would be half Kurosawa.
At least two of them would not be Kurosawa movies.
But you know what? So. You know, spoiler alert right now, my number one would be Hidden Fortress. I mean, so my number one would be a goddamn Kurosawa.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, mine would too. I think
I like Hidden Fortress, and I like Throne of Blood a lot. So,
yeah. It's definitely something I think we want to do at some point. But
you know, maybe we should just cover it in our show on Kurosawa.
Maybe
who knows? We'll see what happens. But
really, at this point, if we did it, we would just talk about Kurosawa pretty much for the whole thing.
Pretty much.
If we did an actual samurai ones, I'd want the chance to look at some other ones too.
Well, and the thing about it is other people make samurai movies. Other people make samurai movies really well. Mm-hmm. Nobody's really done it quite as well as Kurosawa.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things where you don't really find yourself in the mood to sit down and watch a very serious foreign, you know, oftentimes black and white.
Well, I mean,
samurai,
I don't remember when it happened. We had a conversation about we were going to start opening this up to not only just film genres but directors.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember like what I told Ethan was we can do Kurosawa, that's fine, but I want some time to get some of these watched. And that was months ago, easily months ago. And I think I got one or two more watched since then because you can't just sit down and watch four or five Kurosawa movies in the Akira Kurosawa movies in a day. So
yeah, you got to sort of let them soak in.
Yeah, and you got to reflect. But this would be a good conversation for another show.
Yeah, but I just wanted to address that.
Yeah,
because you know now we're going to be talking about fantasy films this time. And I had a lot of fun making a list for this one. Actually,
I did not.
I didn't expect to. So.
But you know what? I didn't not have fun, but I was saying to Noah earlier, this is going to be one of those ones that makes it very apparent where there's going to be three very different, you know, ideas of what a fantasy film makes.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolutely.
It'll be cool. But before we do any of that, we have a segment we like to call Geekly Happenings.
Yep.
It's when we talk about news that's relevant to us geeks. And there's been some stuff that's happened this week. Not a ton of stuff, but some stuff. There's some cool stuff for sure.
A few things. I know you want to talk about some Dark Knight stuff.
I do. I mean, where do we start?
So, let's get some of the lesser stuff out of the way. Sony, just some little brief ones. Sony has set the release date for the Evil Dead remake. It's coming out April 12th, 2013.
April 12, 2013. Yeah. So that's, that's
remake.
6 months. No, I'm sorry. That's a year and 6 months away.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about an Evil Dead without him.
I'm okay with it because they're not doing Ash. It's going to be a different group of
Ash
kids.
Ash is not going to be in the film.
Oh, really?
But Sam Raimi, Rob Tappert, and Bruce Campbell are executive producing. So, I mean, they are involved. So, you know, there is that. I'm going to wait till I see some trailers for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of on the fence about it. I mean, I am a big fan of all of Sam Raimi's dead pictures, but you know, this could be horrible. It could be fun. I really do want to see a Bruce Campbell cameo, and I hope to God that it's an old Ash. I want to see old Ash.
Yes,
it would be hilarious.
Nice.
I want to see.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell's be a manager 54? At S-Mart or something like that.
No, yeah. He wouldn't be a manager.
No, but it would be funny. He'd not be better if he was being Ash, but if he was just an S-Mart employee.
I
want to
see
like
him
that.
As Ash in S-Mart doing the same fucking thing that he was doing 20 years ago with the metal hand, you know, with the boomstick, but with gray hair and the beer belly and the big chin. I mean,
that would be pretty.
That
cool.
would crack my shit up. So.
Have you read any of the Evil Dead comics there, Aaron?
Oh yeah, they're okay. funny. They're really funny. That's one thing I really like about a lot of the Evil Dead stuff, be it the video games or the comic books, is I don't really know the level of involvement with Bruce Campbell and Tappert and Raimi and et cetera.
Sure.
And there is some at least, but they always seem to get it right. I've seen very few poor Evil Dead knockoffs. Yeah, Jason versus Freddy versus Ash cracked me up.
Yeah.
That was
funny.
Oh, that
was hilarious.
And I would highly recommend that if it does tour around and go, if it does show up in any of your areas, you guys need to check out Evil Dead the Musical.
Yeah,
it
I missed it this time around.
It is goddamn funny. It is just hysterical.
That is not going to be on my list, but it could be.
check it out. It's
No. No, Evil Dead's not going to be on my fantasy films list.
Oh, no.
Again... This is the conversation we're going to get into: is what makes a fantasy film and like what differentiates from a horror film.
You can make the argument with Army of Darkness, but you know, hey,
yeah, that's true.
There's swords and magic and shit.
Killing shit with swords.
Oh yeah,
killing shit with swords. Best genre ever.
I spotted a fun article because we're both big fans of Doctor Who.
Kinda.
As some people know, followed Doctor Who. Doctor Who obviously is you know been around for 50 years now. Just about. And there's a lot of the early episodes with William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton that are lost, that got destroyed in various cleansings at the BBC. And so a lot of episodes just aren't around. You can't find them. The audio of them are still in existence, but occasionally it does pop up that they found a few. Two long-lost episodes of Doctor Who were found recently. There's part three of the Hartnell adventure called Galaxy 4, and part two of the Troughton story called Underwater Menace. They went public at a special British Film Institute screening over the last weekend, thanks to efforts of a Radio Times staffer and an amateur film preservationist. Who held onto the prints once he had them. Apparently, he picked them up cheap from an auction or a sale from the Australian Broadcasting Company had them. So they're not complete. There's a few bits where like 24 frames or something here are missing because they were edited out for the Australian broadcast or something like that. But
it's still pretty cool.
I think
that's still awesome.
It's awesome when they find these things. As far as I understand it now, I think the both stories are still missing one part, but this is sort of, it's cool when this happens because they get one step closer to having, you know, finding them again and you know, sharing them with fans. So it's always cool.
I really like Doctor Who, and I really enjoy, you know, I enjoy, like, you know, introducing people to it, but I also like being around people as they're discovering it. Like, our friend Chris Roy from the Bag and Board cast, he's seen a couple of it, but I guess now he's going through and, you know, like, watching it all. And he's like, holy shit, this happened and that. And it's just a lot of fun to see people react.
And now you know how I was feeling when you were going through them.
I was like, fuck yeah!
When you made it to the, what is it, the...
Dalek
the
episode?
The Empty Child.
Yeah, that was...
When you made it to that episode, I knew it because you just started texting me all this shit, and I was like, are you my mummy? And
such a good one.
It's one of those fun things to experience.
My thing about in a way, it's got a very distinct flavor, and it's not for everybody, but it's for a lot more people than a lot of stuff like that is. Like, Rachel really digs it.
And I've said it before, I love it just because it's so distinctly not an American show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, fuck America. I mean, fuck America in the good way. I mean, I'm glad it's there, but I enjoy a lot of non-American productions, and Doctor Who's, you know, forefront on that list.
I will say two of my favorite episodes are the original episodes done by the current executive producer.
Moffat?
Moffat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the library episode and Blink.
Yeah. Blink is one of my favorite episodes. Is Blink the was that the Cyberman one?
No, Blink is the episode with the first episode with the Stone Angels.
That was the one with Moaning Myrtle in it. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shirley Henderson, the actress that played Moaning Myrtle.
She was not in the one with Blink.
Okay, whatever.
No, that's the one. You're thinking of the one with her face gets melted into.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's that episode, the one with the Stone Angels who you can't see.
Oh, that's right. That's a great one.
It's told out of sequence with the Doctor. It's really, mm-hmm. it's a really good one.
I've said it on the show before, but I'll say it again for Noah's sake. My two definite favorite episodes are Dalek with the 10th, 9th Doctor.
Yeah.
10th Doctor.
10th Doctor, yeah.
10th Doctor. It's when they reintroduce the Daleks. And
no,
Ninth. Yeah, it was Eccleston. It was
Chris Eccleston.
You sort of lose track after a while.
Yeah. I've said before that I just really liked it because I thought Eccleston really sold the holy fuck. This is not a recycled villain of the week. This is something with some weight behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the Christmas episode with the Sycorax.
After he regenerates into David Tennant.
Yeah, you know, not bad for Man and his Gym Jams. It's a great episode. Great show. Everybody check it out if you have not seen it yet.
Oh, yeah. And anyone who's listened to the show knows we're diehard fans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Some additional news. They're making an Ender's Game movie.
They are?
Oh, yeah. They've been working on it for a while.
Why? They'll fuck it up.
Probably.
Who's making it? Is it on TV?
It's a theatrical release.
Oh, God. They can't make Ender's Game into a theatrical release.
Ben Kingsley is the latest name to join the cast of Summit Entertainment's upcoming big screen version of Ender's Game. The Hollywood Reporter has word that the Hugo star is in negotiations to play the role of a war hero.
Stop Hammer Time. Did they seriously just call Ben Kingsley the Hugo star?
Yes.
Not Schindler's List, not Gandhi.
Yes.
Wow.
The movie is to be directed by Gavin Hood, who did Tsatsi and X-Men Origins Wolverine. Ender's Game is based on the science fiction novel series by Orson Scott Card. If he signs on, Kingsley will again act opposite Hugo's Asia Butterfield, whatever. The kid, the little kid in Hugo is Ender. He has been signed to Ender.
I want to see that. That's got Christopher fucking Lee in it.
Haley Steinfeld is also likely for the role of Petra Arcanian, and Harrison Ford is said to be the top choice for the role of Colonel Hiram Graff.
He's going
to
be top choice for the role until they have to pay for him.
Yeah. I can't imagine that he'd do it.
No, me neither.
He's not signed. I know the only one that is officially signed is the Hugo star, Butterfield.
Want to talk about some serendipity?
Sure.
Are you done talking that?
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, we're talking about Harrison Ford. Let's talk a little bit about his daddy. Ricky Gervais is working on getting a pilot made for a sitcom. It is it's called Derek, set in a retirement home, and he is hoping to cast the veteran actor Sean Connery to join the cast as his...
Yeah, that won't happen.
I think it will. He's in negotiations, dude. I mean, it isn't he's hoping, it's like in negotiations. I think that sounds kind of interesting. I mean, it would be a BBC television show that's produced by Ricky Gervais. You know, say what you will about him, but the dude knows how to get shit made.
He does.
And, I think it'd be kind of cool. I mean, Sean Connery coming out of retirement. He didn't come out of retirement for Indiana Jones.
Nope.
But he is talking about... I mean, this isn't just a, gee, that would be cool. It's Sean Connery is interested, and they're kicking it around. But it'll probably come back, nah, I'd rather sit on my ass
cool.
and fuck prostitutes and roll in money. But that'd be kind
of
cool.
Speaking of Indiana Jones, though...
Serendipity.
Yeah, George Lucas did talk a little bit about Indiana Jones 5.
This time it's really, 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 really personal.
He has said that they've agreed. He and Spielberg and Ford have agreed on a genre and a basic storyline, but they're looking for the MacGuffin. Quote.
Right on.
They're looking for the item that he needs to be looking for. You know.
Is it going to be the MacGuffin, or is it going to be something like the whatever?
It's what he's calling it. I mean, it
would be really
cool.
Raiders
of the Lost Ark. The Lost Ark was the MacGuffin. And,
well,
you know, the Crystal Skull was the MacGuffin in the last one,
and the fucking Grail was. They're always looking for the MacGuffin.
So I mean, in this one, they don't know. They haven't figured out what to have him look for yet. So
now, Noah, are you one of those motherfuckers that didn't like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Fuck no, I love Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Okay, I don't understand people that don't like that movie.
No, no.
It's not as good as some of the previous ones.
It's better than the second one, God damn it!
But it's still a damn fun movie.
I like it better than the whatchamacallit. I like it a lot better than I like Temple of Doom. And I honestly like Last Crusade and Raiders of the Lost Ark equally. I really like Last Crusade.
You know,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Hey, it's your show. I'm just here. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I completely agree with you as to, like, I love Raiders and Last Crusade completely equally. People who I've talked to whose complaint is, and I don't understand this, is, well, it's not something mystical in this one. It's aliens. I'm like, wait.
Yeah. First off, they weren't alien. They were extra-dimensional beings,
point in fact. Okay, this is my explanation for all those people out there, okay? And I've probably said it on the show before. If you understand it, if you get the movie,
it
just sort of dawns on you and you go, oh, okay. Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark is a pulp adventure story from the 1930s.
Yes, sir.
And then Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is a pulp adventure story from the 1920s.
And Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is a
pulp adventure story
from the 1950s. Okay. So if they do the 1960s, there's going to be like, what, a base in the fucking, like, in a hollowed out volcano? I mean, where are we going to go? I mean,
well, you know, it's you have looking at Temple of Doom.
It's definitely going to have it's definitely going to have a woman villain because of the women's right movement in the 60s.
Well, it's a Temple of Doom being a pulp story from the 20s. The whole villains are, you know, from the cradle of civilization. It's, you know, these dark, dangerous jungles. Then, you know, in the 30s, the pulp villains were Nazis, you know, or in the 40s were Nazis too. And so what were big in the pulp stories in the 50s, but communists and aliens.
Uh-huh.
So no shit, they did that.
And, you know, to go way back on the show, Aaron at redphonezone.com. I really dug the refrigerator nuking scene. I thought that was cool.
Fun. It was entertaining.
It was cool. And I loved the shot of him looking at the mushroom cloud afterwards. That was a beautiful shot.
Yeah, that movie gets hit a lot.
It doesn't deserve it.
And it doesn't deserve it at all.
And I'm sorry you bagged it broadcast, guys. You're wrong. It's a fun movie.
It's an entertaining, fun movie.
It was a movie about 65-year-old Indiana Jones. That's exactly what I wanted, and that's what it was. Oh, I'm sorry. That was a weird tangent, but okay.
That was a weird tangent. But no, I'm glad that you like that movie.
I am too.
Oh, no, I actually own it on DVD. I got it the day it came out.
I owned it on Blu-ray, but it got stolen from me.
Well, there's that, and from what I'm hearing, next year we're getting the Indiana Jones Blu-ray sets.
Cool.
Set supposed to come out.
Is the TV show going to come out on Blu-ray?
It's getting the Star Wars treatment, so... If it's half as good as the Star Wars freaking set,
I was about ready to ask you. You've been watching that. You like the special features? Have you watched the episode?
I'm about 7 or 8 hours into the special features, yes.
Have you watched the episode 3 deleted scenes yet?
Yes.
Did you like the General Grievous one of the chase, where he went through the fucking train?
Oh, that and was then the animatic and all that?
And then Obi-Wan ripped his fucking heart out when he killed it. That was awesome!
There was a few things I was watching that one going, you know, if they could tweak this a little bit, it would have been fucking sweet.
Well, that was the whole thing about it, was there was all kinds of stuff in there that almost worked, like the Yoda Palpatine fight. I would have loved it if you could have seen the screens up there like they had in the animatic.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
I would like to see the Plo Koon and Coyote Mundi scene restored. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see it. It wouldn't really be important, but I'd still like to see it. It's cool. I'm sorry.
No, I'm really digging the extra features.
Isn't that a badass Blu-ray set?
If they do half as awesome
a quarter of awesome on
Indiana Jones, I'm fucking there.
You know,
Now I may actually have to go get them, because I was looking at the Star Wars ones. And I'm like, wow, that's really expensive. And now you're telling me
it's a phenomenal freaking set. Have I talked about
my birthday present on the show yet?
No, I don't think we have.
Okay, Noah. All right. So the way it happens is, I don't know if you know, but I am a Star Wars fan.
No,
I am the huge Star Wars fan, and Ethan can attest to this, and I am, it's not even like and I'm also really good at it. Uh-huh. I mean, like, you know,
And he's not the jackass kind of Star Wars fan. He's, you know.
I get really irritated, but I'm not in your fucking face about it.
No.
I mean, I get irritated at people that regurgitate the same shit that they heard Harry Knowles say or something like that. But I'm the hugest fucking Star Wars fan. And then I heard about this the Blu-ray set's coming out, and I started looking at it. I'm like, that looks amazing, but there was no fucking way I was going to be able to afford it, because it was like it's $129 manufacturer MSRP, yeah. MSRP. And so that meant that, you know, after it goes off sale, it'll be $110-$120. There ain't no fucking way.
Just so people know, it is for the holiday season back on sale.
Oh, is
at,
it
at like $70 or $80 again?
Okay, because that was my reaction to it, was like, I have to have. I'm me. This is Star Wars. This is Blu-ray, and I had to have it. And you know, there's just no way I was gonna be able to afford it. And I was talking to a buddy of mine, Tyler. We talked about him a few times on the show, and I told him, and I don't know. I guess he could have. I guess he just heard the plea in my voice or how sad I was, but he sent out emails to all my friends and my family and stuff and got everybody to throw in, and I got that fucking Blu-ray set for my birthday.
Sent straight to your house. Awesome. Or no, it was sent to Joe.
It was sent to Joe, and Joe gave it to me, and it was amazing, and yeah. That made me so happy, and you know, that's one of those reasons why I love Star Wars, because you know, it brings people together. Everybody knows Star Wars.
We knew how important it was to you. Man.
It is important to me, and it was just so amazing. And it's a great DVD set. It was worth it. It wasn't like I was all like, this was so amazing because my friends did this really sweet, heartwarming thing to give me a DVD set that fucking blew. No, it's an amazing DVD set, too. So,
that's great.
Sorry.
Watched the movies.
I'm probably going to edit this out. But you know,
probably. But hey,
yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, great DVD sets. I like Darth Vader when he yells.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. It's cool.
And if you watch all of the features, the Boba Fett segment of the Christmas special is in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so. Hidden. It's hidden in the Boba Fett armory part of the Empire Strikes Back disc.
I just finished that. I'm in the disc 2 of the disc 2 during the Return of the Jedi stuff. So.
The Star Wars parodies is really cool. I mean, it's just like, it's probably like a 90 minute long thing of of the different, you know, like Family Guy or, you know, How I Met Your Mother or you know,
Chicken and all.
Yeah, all that stuff. It's really fun. I mean, it just shows how much Star Wars means to everybody.
The only of the Family Guy ones I haven't seen is It's a Trap. I haven't seen that one yet.
Is that the newest one?
It's a Trap. Yeah, it's the newest one.
Okay, I liked the newest one. That one
I liked the newest
good.
One better than I liked Something, Something, Something Dark Side.
Yeah, me too.
But I love Blue Harvest. Blue Harvest was hilarious.
Blue Harvest, hilarious.
All right.
Sorry.
And we actually mentioned this movie a while back, but it's the... Remember talking about The Hit with Terrence Stamp?
Yeah.
Okay. Stephen Frears, who is the director, is actually going to direct a remake of it.
And he made the original.
Yes.
Cool.
He did the original. He said that director Stephen Frears, writer Peter Prince, and producer Jeremy Thomas are reuniting to remake their 1984 film, The Hit.
It's a good movie.
Thomas says that the remake is going to move the action to Mexico and the United States. But that's all we know so far. I just spotted that today. And
Terrence
Stamp, we were just talking about that. Haven't heard anything else beyond that. That little blurb right there is the news bit. That
right on.
Like
I
the
love
entire
Terrence
article
Stamp,
other than a brief synopsis of the original film.
Mm-hmm.
Nominations for the 18th Annual Screen Actors Guild Award came
saw
out.
Saw that,
today.
No Harry Potter.
No Harry Potter.
But The Help was the number one most nominated thing. Now the SAGs are the SAG director has won. Excuse me, the person who wins like the best director at the SAGs. Like 95% of the time, I think it is, he wins wins the Oscar for Best Director as well. Or am I thinking of the DAGs? I could be. Yeah. Sorry, but...
It's okay.
But yeah, The Help was very heavily nominated, and as well it should be, is a really good movie.
Mm-hmm. And before we get into some Batman stuff...
Batman.
There was Nick Frost talked a bit
like
in
Nick
an
Frost.
Interview recently... and let it slip that he, Simon Pegg, and Edgar Wright are planning on working together again.
Into the World,
yes, to do a... Well, they don't know... He doesn't know if that's the actual title anymore.
But it's a movie about aliens attacking.
It's they're going to do... It's going to be their third movie in their quote-unquote trilogy of...
Blood and Ice
Shaun
Cream.
Of the Dead, yeah.
Or the Coronado trilogy,
yeah. Of Shaun of the Dead, and then Hot Fuzz, and then this one, so... I just thought that was cool because Hot Fuzz was hysterical.
I didn't know that was news. Was I mean, I know that they've been talking about making that for a while. Well, and the ice cream cone's going to be green.
People weren't really sure if it was going to happen anymore because Simon Pegg's career is taken off. And Edgar Wright's career is way taken off.
I'd like to see Nick Frost do more than he does.
Yeah, and Edgar Wright...
Nick Frost is going to be the lead. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that they're switching, switching that.
Yeah, he's going to be the lead, and Simon Pegg's going to be the...
Edgar Wright has said that he... has basically said he plans on doing it. It's just he's in.
What's he doing now?
Freaking busy. So he had something to do with Tintin.
That's right. He's directing the third one. Spielberg did the first one. Jackson's doing the second, and he's doing the third one. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me. And he was also producing it and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why he was. He was.
And I know that he's attached to Scott Pilgrim too when the books come out. Yeah. So.
Okay, well, when we were last talking, we talked a bit about the alternate reality game that Dark Knight Rising was starting, and it turned out the next day that it was
alternate reality,
ARG.
Okay.
You know those CIA documents that they
released. Well, yeah, but it's viral marketing.
Viral marketing.
Okay, I've never heard it called that, but okay, go ahead.
The next day they launched their Operation Early Bird. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, led to Discover locations where you could go to see.
And I would like to point out that I cracked that motherfucker faster than the internet did. I was so proud of myself. However, it sucked.
Yes.
Because, you know, yeah, it's great. We can go see the Dark Knight Rises prologue early if I want to drive 170 miles. But
yeah.
You know, it's still
I think
pretty
the
cool.
closest one to us is in Des Moines.
Yeah, it's 163.7 miles. I looked it up on MapQuest.
Lame.
If it was just like an hour or two, I might have thought about it.
Damn you, AMC Theaters. You're based here in Kansas City. Why didn't you get it here in Kansas City?
But I'm not that mad because we live in the world of the internet.
We do.
And I have seen The Dark Knight Rises prologue. Ethan has not, and Noah, you have not as well, right?
No, I have not seen it yet.
And it's cool. All right,
that's all he has to say.
It's cool. All right, good night, folks. No, let your geek flag fly. No, it's cool. Basically, if you've read anything about it, there's a the viral marketing was hinting at the Dr. Leonid Pavel, Pavel,
Pavel.
That is where the trailer picks up is because the communiques with the viral marketing stuff was. Like, they were doing some sort of negotiation to get this prisoner, the Leonid Pavel. And they get Leonid Pavel, and they take him and a hooded prisoner on board an airplane, and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. How spoilery should I be?
Oh, be all spoilery.
It's an airplane heist, and Bane is in the prologue. And the main thing that's being said by the people who've seen this is that Bane's voice is very hard to understand and et cetera, and I'm not really one to jump on a bandwagon, but I agree. It is pretty hard to understand. I've explained it as it reminds me of Jeremy Irons crossed with Cyrax from Mortal Kombat. It's a very British and robotic-y voice. But I also want to point out that there's an airplane heist going on. So, it's, you know, you hear airplane engines and gunshots and lots of background noise. So it's kind of hard to make him out. I'd like to hear a scene that isn't so loud before I really make any real judgments about something needs to be fixed. But I know that Christopher Nolan has said that they are going to work on it, meaning that they're going to throw it through the sound mixing once again.
Sure, and probably get some ADR.
Yeah, exactly. And I like his voice. I would just like to hear it a little bit better. But, yeah, and I think I said three things about it. It opens up with a really cool eulogy of Harvey Dent by Gordon. And it's short. It's probably like 10, 15 seconds long. But, you know, it was like, you know, he said, "I believed in Harvey Dent." And I could see that being on posters and whatnot. And he's they're opening up Blackgate Prison. And they're dedicating it to Harvey Dent.
Oh, cool.
So there's kind of like a little bit of a eulogy going on there. But the airplane heist goes on. And then it's over. You can very much tell that it was directed by the dude that did Inception. Because the airplane, you know, obviously the flight does not go as planned. It does not land on its scheduled time. And shit ensues, and the airplane goes down. Like, it's very reminiscent of the spinning room scene with Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Inception.
Oh, cool.
It also very much reminded me of a James Bond movie, because it kind of had, like, cold opening with, like, the big-ass action sequence. So
nice.
It's very neat. And at the end of it, there was a long, or not long, 30-second long
montage
of shots from the movie, and it's cool.
Because what we need is a montage.
Montage.
And, of course, they also revealed the new one sheet, that poster.
Yes, they did.
And I figured you want to talk a little bit about that.
I like it. Have you seen it, Noah?
Yeah, I saw it after you posted it on Facebook. It looks cool.
Stunning.
Yeah.
I mean, I was covered in man juice when I started talking about this about the Skyline one, because I think that's a beautiful poster. But this,
the new one,
it's breathtaking.
It's very cool.
I mean, it's kind of cool because it's a shot in the rain, and you see Bane standing in the background, and it's kind of out of focus, and the focus is on a broken cowl, and the top of the poster says "The Legend Ends," and it would look really nice on my wall, but I can't find anywhere to purchase it at this juncture. But I want to.
Yeah,
very cool poster.
Give it a week, dude. They may not have
motherfucker. I've given it 3 days. How much longer do I need to give it? I mean, they should have had it like at allposters.com or fuck that. WarnerBrothers.com should have had thousands of those things printed up, ready to ship the second they put that thing out on the internet. It's
well,
cool.
Well, we got a good slew of trailers that came out this last week, too. I spotted one for a movie called MS1 Maximum Security, which is actually that lockout I was talking about last week. They actually have a real trailer for it up now, and apparently, after watching the trailer, it is a movie that looks like it's made for Ethan.
Sounded like it, too.
Totally looks like Escape from New York, but in space.
Escape from...
Nice.
Escape from Earth.
Guy Pearce plays a... They don't give his name or anything.
What happened to him?
I don't know.
Wasn't he, like, set to explode? Like
he was.
And he didn't.
Apparently, MS-1 is this maximum security prison in that orbits Earth or is in outer space somewhere. And all the prisoners suddenly revolt while the president's daughter is visiting. And so the president, who's played by Peter Stormare, I think...
Cool.
It's either him or...
It
really
Stormare.
Wasn't very clear in the trailer, but it's either him because he's in it.
The American president or the Earth president?
I don't know.
I would vote for Peter Stormare right now for
the
president.
That villain on Highlander for the longest time, the TV series, Horton.
Oh, really?
Is in it, too. So either he's the president or Stormare is the
Horton,
president. But they're
the
two,
Watcher?
Yeah, the guy who went to become a hunter and started killing everyone.
He killed Darius.
Yes.
Isn't
guy.
He, like, old and fat now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
But
just like me.
Maggie Grace is the daughter from Taken. The daughter from Taken.
Ah, okay. Oh, wow.
And they hire, or they send in...
Taken. Guy is that a TV show?
No, the Liam Neeson movie.
Okay.
Taken.
Wasn't there a TV show called Taken,
There was
too?
A miniseries
okay.
called Taken. They send in Guy Pearce's character to get her out. And that's pretty much the trailer.
Sounds like an Ethan movie.
Yeah, and it sounds like Escape from New York.
Cool. Neat.
Or really more Escape from L.A., because that was the one with the
Escape
president's
from Lawrence.
Daughter. Yeah. Escape from Lawrence, yes. We also got the trailer for G.I. Joe Retaliation, directed by John Chu, I think, something like that.
Holy shit, has there been an internet explosion about that? Jesus!
Yeah.
Everybody's reacting to that goddamn trailer.
Okay,
I don't get it, but okay.
But it's not from you guys, but from other people.
Go ahead and do it again, Noah. You cut out. Go ahead and say that again.
I said I know there's going to be backlash, maybe not from the two of you, but there will be backlash for my saying this. I liked the first one.
Ethan liked it,
too. Dude, I own it on Blu-ray. I thought that first one was goddamn entertaining.
I just don't care about it. No, but the reaction has been...
It's a fun movie. You could turn your brain off and watch cool things explode. So,
I thought that the reaction to the trailer was overwhelmingly positive. And, I mean, it looks like the sequel to G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, and it is. It's the only people that are coming but that are back from the first movie.
The ninjas
is,
and Ken.
Jonathan
Ken.
Price is back.
And Jonathan Price, I saw him.
Jonathan Price...
Zartan.
Yeah, Zartan.
Mm-hmm. But he was the president.
Yes, as the president. Also with...
Channing Tatum.
Channing
as Duke.
Tatum as Duke is back, plus then Snake Eyes and...
Storm Shadow.
Yeah.
What the fuck, dude?
But no one else is back.
Yeah, how does Storm Shadow back? Didn't he die in the first one?
Please, like that's going to stop him.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Sure in the they showed him walking in the trailer and he was wet.
And he is alive.
And wet, so, you know.
No, I gotta say, I was very, very disappointed not to see Joseph Gordon-Levitt
Exactly.
Commander.
I said that online. I said, you know, you're not going to get my ass in a chair if you're going to get rid of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and put the fucking Rock and Bruce Willis in it.
This is another movie that looks to be made for me, so, I'm totally glad to see it. I love the first one. This one looks to be cheeseball entertainment. Plus, Bruce Willis is in it, goddammit. So.
Yeah. Yes.
I got a question to show my G.I. Joe stupidity. Yep. Is General Joe Colton G.I. Joe?
I have no idea.
Okay.
He doesn't ring any bells with me.
Okay.
Also, Ray Stevenson is in the movie.
Yeah, I saw that.
So
he's
somebody. Firefly.
Who's Firefly?
And who the fuck is the bad guy?
And who's Roadblock?
It's The Rock.
No, I get that, but who is that?
The bald black guy.
The Rock isn't black. Or bald.
So he's The Rock.
He was in the cartoon, right?
Yeah.
Well, he was a minor character, right?
No, he was a popular character in the cartoon.
I never heard of this motherfucker.
Roadblock.
Lady J's in it.
Yeah, Lady J.
I remember her. She had cool spear things.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I remember Serpentor, and I guess he sucks, but...
Well, yeah.
When I
Cobra,
was...
La, 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 la.
When I was 4, he was cool. But, you know.
So, you know...
good. I hope it's great.
I'm going to see it, so...
I hope Weatherwax digs it, because, boy, did he not like that first one.
Well, you know, I love John, but... I liked that movie. And we liked Jones and the Crystal Skull.
You know what? I liked, I think I said to Noah earlier, maybe, I dug the scene when Cobra Commander put on his mask and he said, "And you will call me Commander." Yeah. I liked that scene.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
That struck me as a fist-pumping moment if I cared.
Sure. I wasn't expecting it. That's what caught me by surprise. I'm like, so wait, so there's this Cobra organization. Okay, there's Destro, but there's no Cobra Commander? Like, where the heck... No. Oh! That was my reaction, sorry.
See, and my reaction was, I follow movie news, and I knew damn well that Joseph Gordon-Levitt was playing Cobra Commander.
Yeah.
So, I was just all like, what the fuck, Dr. Mindbender, and...
Plus, we also got, you know, Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah,
you
know, I liked him
in
that.
I'm sad that some of these people aren't back for the next
one.
Well,
there was a really negative response to the first one, even though it made a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Hence, getting a sequel.
Right on.
Speaking of sequels, we also got the trailer for Men in Black 3.
Looks better than the second one.
Which is not hard.
No.
The second one was shit.
Now, is it going to be like 87 minutes long like the first two?
Maybe. But it's got Josh Brolin in it.
As young Tommy Lee Jones.
Young Tommy Lee Jones.
And
so, is that who that is? Oh, my God.
Which makes me curious is how much is Tommy Lee Jones in this one?
Probably not much.
So, yeah.
But he probably does a lot of VO work and, you know.
Yeah, and I love Tommy Lee Jones.
So, I like him a lot, too. I like the first one, and I know the first one was super short. It was like 90, 93 minutes. Was the second one as short?
Probably.
And I know it also really fucking blew. I hated that movie. It was horrible.
Men in Black
the first one.
2 was 88 minutes.
This weird. They just make is Sonnenfeld directing it?
I don't know.
I think he the third one. Did he
Probably.
Direct the second one?
I think so.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure he's doing the second one.
Yeah, Sonnenfeld did both 2, and he's doing 3.
And he did do the first one as well. Huh. Okay.
So, yeah, there's that. It looks like Men in Black, you know, back for more.
It looks okay.
Yeah.
It's a time travel movie.
The first movie is fun, but we'll see. We'll see. We also got the new trailer for Battleship. And,
right on.
As I've said, I played that game when I was a kid, and I do not remember Space Aliens.
I don't remember Liam Neeson in
but
it either.
This has got Liam fucking Neeson in
it
so
sure
hey,
does.
I'm sort of there.
Yeah,
really.
I'll watch it. Maybe I won't make it to the theater, but I'm definitely going to check it out.
And it is a total big alien invasion flick.
Right
so,
the fuck
you know,
on.
And it's directed by Peter Berg.
Who's that?
He's an actor and a director.
I know the name.
He was in...
A movie with stuff.
Collateral.
Was he Jamie Foxx?
He was one of the cops in Collateral, one of the detectives.
The blonde guy.
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, on.
He's also a director.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the only one that movie that's coming to mind that he has directed was... The Rundown.
Rises. Oh, The Rundown?
With The Rock.
I haven't seen that. Was that the movie where he was a cop?
No, that was the one where he was...
That was the one where he was.
That was one with our pick for the Flash. What's his name? The kid was in all the American Pie movies.
John William Scott.
He's not my pick for the Flash. He's my pick for Booster Gold.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah.
That would actually be freaking awesome. Peter Berg. Let's see, what else is he?
I'm looking him up. Keep talking.
So, yeah, Battleship, directed by Peter Berg. He was attached for a while to direct, to do a new version of Dune, but I think that fell apart.
Imagine that.
So, there's, yeah, so Battleship, directed by...
Okay, he was also in Friday Night Lights. Mm-hmm. That's right, I remember that.
Hancock.
What's that? And Hancock.
He directed Hancock.
Yeah, that's right, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, yeah. I like Hancock, okay.
He's not bad. No. It's just interesting to have him direct something like that. But, yeah, Battleship, the next trailer for that.
Fucking right on.
And the last trailer I spotted was The Three Stooges.
Boy, does that look fucking stupid.
Oh, my God.
That looks horrible.
You know who it's written and directed by?
It's the Farrelly Brothers.
It's the Farrelly Brothers, yes. Here I was hoping for a biopic. You know, I'm like going, something to go with Chaplin. You know, that'd be,
there you
it'd
go.
Be a fun, it'd be a, not necessarily fun, but a good movie.
Well, you
no,
remember,
it looks like shit.
You know, you remember when it was, when it had like Sean Penn and fucking Jim Carrey and...
Yeah.
Who the hell was playing Larry?
I don't remember. But I remember, you know,
Daniel Day-Lewis. That was going to be an incredible fucking movie.
Yeah, and I was like going, cool, a nice biopic like that would be awesome.
And now
like,
it's...
I heard they've dropped off, and now it's a fucking stupid slapstick. We talked last time about comedies and how not to do comedies, and this looks like a stupid freaking movie.
It's got Sean Hayes and the dude from How I Fucked Your Mother, or what's that show? No, that dude from... No, Shit My Dad Says. There we go. The guy from Shit My Dad Says, and then somebody else, and it looks... bad.
And watching the trailer, I look at it, it's going, okay, this is
how could they do
this isn't a movie about the Three Stooges.
No.
It is, let's make a new Three Stooges movies without the Three Stooges, replace the Three Stooges with guys from now and
who
set it
suck.
Today.
And they aren't even
so
talented
like going,
guys from now.
What the hell, you know? This
I
is
was
just such an epic fail.
Furious when I saw, because I thought, because they had Jim Carrey and et cetera, I thought it was going to be this interesting biopic. And then
well,
I saw this trailer.
I told you, I was thinking like Chaplin type
of
thing. It's like something that's
maybe a little bit better than Chaplin, but I mean, God, it looks horrible. And I was fucking angry when I watched that stupid trailer.
Yeah. So,
sorry. Noah, have you seen it? Do you care as much as apparently we do?
No, I when they dropped the whole thing. I just when Carrie and those guys dropped out of it, I'm just like, I don't care.
I was excited about Sean Penn.
Yeah, did I. You know, it's like this is gonna have some acting chops to it. This might be really cool to see.
And
what happened? They decided they didn't feel like spending the money for it.
They decided they wanted to make it a shitball comedy.
Well, I don't know if that's what, but I know that they went through a bunch of bullshit because the Three Stooges are lawyered the fuck up.
Oh yeah,
they are lawyered the fuck up. So I think that something happened and it went on too long and it fell apart.
Yeah, it's just too bad. It just means us fans like us get shafted.
Well, I'm just not going to see it. That's easy.
So yeah.
I like the Farrelly Brothers. They can sometimes make a good movie.
Sometimes.
Like, I liked Me, Myself, and Irene okay. I liked Kingpin okay. I did not like the... I don't know.
But, you know, on to more positive things, did you see the pictures of Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln?
For Lincoln, yes.
Wow.
He looks fantastic.
I cannot wait to see that movie. You know who else is in that movie? Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Hey.
You know who else is in that movie? Tommy Lee Jones. You know who else is in that movie? Sally Field. You know who else is in that movie? All kinds of people. It looks incredible. Do you know who's directing it?
That's Steven Spielberg.
Fuck yeah.
So
Spielberg's directing it?
Yes. Wow. I'm there. It could suck, but a movie with Daniel Day-Lewis playing somebody with lots of research.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
I know
for a while it was going to be Liam Neeson.
Yeah, it just took too long. He said he's too old for it.
He sadly fell out. Well, hell, you know, now he gets to do...
Battleship.
Well, no, not Battleship. No, what he's filming next is Les Miserables.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
no, he's not.
That's
yes,
right.
He is.
He's in Les Miserables.
Yes,
it's not.
Yes.
He's the villain.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's.
It's Hugh Jackman, Anne Hathaway. Like he's.
Wow.
And
so it isn't.
Liam Neeson.
So it isn't fucking Bettany anymore.
No.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Liam Neeson is the villain.
How fucking there am I?
This is all official. So, I mean...
How fucking... I love Les Miserables. I love
Hugh Jackman. I love Anne Hathaway. I love Liam Neeson. I am so fucking there. It isn't funny.
Aaron, how are you feeling about Helena Bonham Carter too?
I like her. Okay. I mean, I don't really have strong feelings one way or another about her. I think she needs to keep the fuck away from Tim Burton on screen.
Yes.
Other than that, like, she was really good.
She was damn good in King's Speech, and this is directed by Tom Hooper.
Where are you seeing this thing about Liam Neeson being in it? Because according to IMDb, at least it says Russell Crowe is playing Javert.
See, yeah.
No, last I saw.
And you know what? You're right. I heard that too, because at one point it was Paul Bettany, and then I heard something about Russell Crowe.
Now, the last thing I saw was Liam Neeson.
Because Liam Neeson was Jean Valjean in the non-musical one that they made like 15 years ago. And Jeffrey Rush was Javert.
I'll have to hunt around and see if I can find the article I read. So
Fuck, though. Yeah, I like...
Either way, you know...
I'm fucking there already.
Yeah.
I'm already there, but... Cool.
That's it for... That's all the geekly happenings I've got.
Man, I did a lot of screaming into the microphone for that one.
You did.
That's all right. That's what noise gate is for.
That's true. That's what Levelator.
Levelator makes it a little bit easier, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, do we miss any news that we need to talk about, Noah?
Not that I know of, unless you want to count the fact that I'm sitting here also on my PlayStation. I'm going through what just got put on Netflix, and The Return of the Killer Tomatoes is on here.
The Return of the Attack.
Return.
The Return.
I think Attack
second.
Is on there as well.
Yeah,
Return of the Killer Tomatoes does feature George Clooney.
It does. I like that movie a lot.
Yeah,
cool.
And John Astin, I believe, was in that one.
He's definitely in one of them. I don't know which one.
Well, yeah, John Astin is in the second one.
He is in both. He is in it. Yeah,
he's the mad scientist.
Yep,
because you know he likes.
He plays. He's in both of them, isn't he? Because he's the first one.
No, I don't think he's in the first one.
I don't.
But
remember.
It's been a long time since I saw that first one.
It's been a really long time since I've seen that one.
It was a cornball movie, but
it was
awesome.
A good one though.
But that's all I got.
I got personal news. It was really fun. I was talking to Noah earlier today when he was playing the end of Batman Arkham City. And it was so much fun listening to him react to this stuff, much akin to what I was saying with the Doctor Who stuff, because he got to do the whole getting to fight Clayface with Ra's al Ghul's sword, which I thought was the coolest shit ever in a video game. And
well, yeah.
Did you enjoy it, Noah?
Oh, I wasn't that... thought. That entire game is
just
a
listen
blast.
To that sentence again.
Batman with a sword.
Ra's
al Ghul's sword.
Ra's al Ghul's sword killing Clayface.
The Clayface I could take or leave.
That's
but,
true, but adding that in still
sure.
makes it does up the awesome a little bit.
But, you know, fuck Clayface killing clay monsters. Climbing out of a pool of Clayface.
This show is well established that Batman with a sword is awesome.
Yes.
Batman with Ra's al Ghul's sword
is
awesomer. Even more awesome. Yes. It's awesomer.
Especially when I am the focal point or
exactly when you're controlling him,
the ground zero explosion. I was so excited when that happened. I'm all like, holy shit, oh wow, I got Ra's al Ghul's sword. I'm Batman with a sword and I'm not just a pitcher. And it was so fun. It's a great game. Check it out if you haven't seen it.
I'll eventually try it someday.
You should. It's pretty cool. But I guess that brings it into Geekly Happenings. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back with our main topic discussion where we talk about fantasy. And we are back. We just had a fun little long-winded and loud discussion about our geekly happenings, but this is why we're here, folks. Tonight we are talking and continuing our ongoing discussion of film genres. Tonight our host, Noah, he chose to talk about fantasy films. And he chose these over samurai films. We talked about why you decided not to do samurai films, but why did you choose to replace them with fantasy films?
Honestly, it's I after sitting down and thinking about like what genres do I know and what do I watch, I came up with, you know, I really watch a lot of fantasy. I like fantasy, and you know, as Ethan can attest, I do a lot of fantasy stuff in general, whether it's the books I read, the movies I watch, or you know, how I know Ethan through the tabletop games I play.
Naturally.
So, you know, this was a natural extension kind of that.
Ooh.
So
I just thought about something. Now, I was making this list, and it became pretty apparent to me that I've somewhat outgrown this genre. I'm not saying that I'm above it or anything, but I was much more into it as a teenager and, you know, and younger adult than I am now. But there are some pretty good films in here, and I discovered that it just really kind of depends on what your definition of fantasy is, because you could make the argument that most films are fantasy because, you know, didn't really happen, and, you know, it's just... I mean, it just kind of comes down to your definition of what you feel is a fantasy film.
Well, personally, when I think of a fantasy film, it's got to have, for the most part, either it's got to have swords, it's got to have magic, or it's just got to have something completely
otherworldly.
Way out. It's got to have something unworldly, but the limit on that is it's got to be unworldly without technology.
Yeah. I mean, not an alien or some shit like that.
Right.
For me, this movie, you know, you're talking fantasy film, you might as well just talk sword and sorcery film for me. I had a lot of fun making this list, and I sort of came to realize that sword and sorcery movies are a hard film to make.
And it's a hard sell, too.
It's a hard sell, and... you know, I'm thinking now of some movies that aren't on my list that I could potentially put on there, but aren't ones that I really consider, hey, that's a fantasy flick, or, you know, it's not one that sort of readily comes to mind when I think sword and sorcery. But it is apparent to me that this is a hard genre to make.
It is.
It's one
it
that...
I bet you it's hard to get money for it, too.
Probably hard to get money for it, but it's hard to do right.
Oh, sure.
Well, to do it right, you have to spend money on it.
When I was looking at making my list, which I was doing earlier today, I decided, you know, well, let me see what other people consider fantasy. So I went to IMDb, I said genres, and I clicked on fantasy. And it's very interesting because so many different things came up when I hit that. And, you know, things that, you know, Twilight.
Yeah.
Yeah, Twilight.
Twilight, Forrest Gump, things like that should pop up when you look at fantasy genre, yeah.
But interestingly enough, another thing that popped up was Tom Hanks, The Green Mile. And I sat there for a second. I'm like, you know what?
I did not research it, but I've been reading some Stephen King lately, and it came to my mind thinking about you know Salem's Lot and et cetera. And then Green Mile did come to my mind, but I didn't end up using it. But I mean, that just goes to show you that it's just, I mean, it's,
well,
there's just so many different choices here.
I'm very disappointed because I was just doing a little research as we were talking during the other segment. They've canned the Dark Tower movie.
Yeah. We've talked about that on the show in the past. I still think it's going to happen, though.
It'll happen eventually, but Ron Howard has pulled out and Javier Bardem has pulled out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really too bad. I haven't read those, but I've heard good things about them.
I'm coming out to Kansas. I will have to bring you an edition of The Gunslinger just because it is one of my favorite series of all time.
And you know, it's you know, entirely what happens on our podcast. We're going to get a little bit off topic here. I read or audiobook, but it's the same thing as reading. The 11/22/63, Stephen King's new book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how was that?
I'm still not sure, but I'm leaning towards the negatory because when somebody tells you about it, they tell you it's about a high school English teacher who goes back in time to interfere with the assassination of JFK. And
right.
That's the synopsis of it, and that's accurate, other than the fact that that's such a small part of it. Because, you know, part of the story is, you know, the way he goes back in time, there's like this stairway that leads back to 1958. And so he's got to go back to 1958, and then he's got to wait until 1963. So there's 5 years in between, and so it's most of the novel is about what happens in between. And it's I'm not going to tell people not to read it, but I mean if you're wanting to get some next worldly, you know, conspiratorial shit going on with JFK, it ain't going
to
happen.
Yeah, and I've yet to actually read a Stephen King book that I like. So.
I like to see. I like his short. I like his short stories. I wanted to shoot myself in the dick with a bazooka when I read The Stand because I found it so boring.
But I like his short stories. I like The Green Mile. I liked Shining. The Thinner. I like Thinner. It was a Bachman book, but the
Dead Zone is good. Honestly, did you finish The Stand?
Yes, and I felt like when I read that, I felt like when I was reading Lord of the Rings. It was really long, really really wordy, really.
It's
an accomplishment to get it read. I don't hate myself for reading it, but at the same time, hoof, you know.
Getting back to fantasy genre, this sort of reminds me though that when you're talking fantasy genre, it's something that actually has that takes off and is really rich and really good in literary form. It's great in book form, but it's very hard to translate that to
it comes
movies.
Across silly.
Well, it does. If it's not done right, it comes across silly. But if you sit back and if it's done right, say the Game of Thrones TV series is done right. It's treating it seriously, you know. But inevitably, whenever you see magic going on screen, it's all kind of hokey.
That fucking dragon movie with Jeremy Irons? And it had a
Dungeons and Dragons.
No. It Aragorn.
Aragorn.
Oh God,
right. Aragorn.
That was a pretty neat book, and it was a horrible movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible movie.
I understand that. I never read the book or saw the movie. So
the book was pretty good. I only
read the first one, but the movie was just not good.
Well, I found when I was making my list that I sort of intentionally ended up leaving Harry Potter off the list.
Yep, I did too.
Because it's like, yes, it's fantasy, but I'm like, we talked that to death, and I don't want to get into that. So
yeah, exactly.
I was like, I'm going to go straight sword and sorcery movies. And then when I was looking at movies too, I was like, okay, I'm going to discount the sword and sandal films, you know, Clash of the Titans was out because I'm like, I'm going to consider that more a mythology movie. So
exactly.
I'm like, let's get that out of here and go straight sword and sorcery. But Conan the Barbarian ended up not being on my list
because it's
one I really didn't think of, but it is a sword and sorcery movie. But
oh, absolutely.
It's sort of not the sword and sorcery movie that I think of, sword and sorcery movie that I think of when I was coming up with this list. So,
segueing, if you don't mind my doing this, just because you mentioned it, Conan the Barbarian is my number 10.
And Conan, I mean, if we're gonna go there, it's my number 6.
All right, well, there we go.
We should
probably just jump in.
Yeah, Ethan, what's your number 6?
My number 6 is a movie that I actually didn't like when I was growing up because it actually scared me.
Okay.
And oddly, looking through this list that I made, I really want to make a quick point here. One of my favorite fantasy movies, it's not really a movie, it was a half-hour TV cartoon special called Fairies. It was aired on, I believe it was ABC in 1981.
Not
available anywhere at all.
Really?
It was really, really cool. But the problem is, I haven't seen it since I was a child. So I just wanted to mention that real quick, but it didn't make the list. But this next movie is on here. One thing I found when I was looking all these up is a lot of the movies I like either aren't available on Blu-ray in the United States, and the DVDs are out of print. This one is both. This one is Dragon Slayer, 1981, directed by Matthew Robbins.
Talk about my number 7.
Here we go.
I like that movie a lot.
When I was growing up, I didn't like it because
the dragon was terrifying.
The dragon scared me when I was a kid. And so that memory stuck in my head for the longest time until I finally sat down to watch this movie again like 5 years ago.
And it's still
and I was
pretty
like,
scary.
Oh, I can watch this movie now. But when I was a kid, it just scared the crap out of me. But this movie's a well-done sword and sorcery flick. You know, you have magic. It doesn't seem too hokey. There's a dragon in it that is done in 1981. So, I mean, the effects aren't, you know, phenomenal. But the dragon in it doesn't look dumb. It's actually believable. It's actually scary.
I thought it was
kind of
cool how they killed it.
Well, yeah.
It was pretty gnarly, that's blown-up body.
And it's that, you know, classic, you know, fairy tale sword and sorcery flick of guy has to kill dragon, right? Mm-hmm. And it is done has been done numerous times since then in sci-fi original movies and, you know, Dragonheart. But it just isn't done, doesn't work,
so close to putting Dragonheart on my list. I kind of almost like it.
Sure. I mean, and Dragon Slayer, which, you know, DVD is out of print, and the Blu-ray, there is, it isn't on Blu-ray anywhere.
You can actually watch it on Amazon Instant Video.
Yeah,
according.
I found you could do that on a lot of these, on a lot of the movies that I looked at, was you can look, see them online, but they're not, like, available to buy, like, in a nice Blu-ray edition or something. But Dragon Slayer is a Walt Disney movie. It's owned by Disney.
And when I was looking it up, I was quite surprised about
that.
Yeah, I also didn't realize...
Because it scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
I also didn't realize it was Peter McNichol.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah,
he's
Viggo.
Yeah, Viggo.
And, you know, I always think of him Ghostbusters, too.
Sure.
But, yeah, so that's my number six is Dragon Slayer.
It's a good one. Have you checked that one out, Noah?
No, I'm looking at it right now, and I'm actually going to mark it for finding and watching later.
It's pretty interesting.
It is, you know. It's an 80s fantasy film, but it's actually not dumb.
Yeah.
It's not Red Sonja.
Yeah. Well, excellent. What is your number six, Noah?
Red Sonja.
My number six is Dragonheart, actually.
I like Dragonheart, and I almost don't like... I mean, I'm really on the edge with it, because I like stuff about it, and I hate stuff about it.
The dragon is really cool in it.
And I did not
It's Connery! It's the voice of...
It's a dragon that wasn't hokey. It wasn't Pete's dragon, you know?
Did not like David Thewlis in it.
He's awful.
And I love David Thewlis.
David Thewlis can be great, but...
He almost ruined that movie. And
that
his stupid fucking haircut.
But the problem is, I've seen that movie numerous times. It just never quite gets there for me, you know?
And I also got burned on a bad transaction with a shitty wannabe axe from
that
movie.
Yes, I remember. You gave that to me.
Yes, it was not
I don't have it anymore.
Thank God.
I threw it away. So Dragonheart. Go ahead, Noah. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, I, you know, Dennis Quaid, Sean Connery, and...
Back when Dennis Quaid was the kiss of death for movies.
Yep.
Yeah,
he was for a while,
and
that was definitely. Oh, it's a Dennis Quaid film.
Who was the girl in the movie?
I don't remember her name, but I think it was the same redhead that was in Starship Troopers.
Dina Meyer.
Yes. There you go. That's right.
Thank you.
Okay. She was kind of hot.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing you guys have to remember is the age difference between us. I was only 11 when this movie came out.
Uh-huh.
Really?
Yes.
I seemed like I was in fucking high school, if not out of high
school. What year did that come out?
It's like
96.
So I would have been 17 when that came out.
So was 15 years old.
Yeah.
So,
15 years old.
So you know, maybe I just have a lot more memories, you know, like a kid's memories of this movie. Because I remember going to see it. I remember in the theaters with my mom,
I saw it in theaters. If I had been 5 years younger, I probably would have enjoyed it.
Well,
better.
You were weren't you a huge ass film snob when you were like 16?
Probably.
I mean, worse than you are now.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now
this is one of those movies that I've tried to give it another shot, and it just doesn't do it for me.
Like stuff about it. I personally,
it's not a movie. Don't get me wrong. It's not a movie that I say, oh, it's a shitty movie. It's awful. I hate it. It's all right.
For me, it's 100%. I can't get past Thewlis, and it's even worse because I like him as much as I do.
Yeah, and it's just bad. It's just a bad script. Mm-hmm. He just didn't have it. But
they called the dragon fucking Draco.
Yeah,
I mean, what the fuck? Sorry.
Yeah. So yeah. Don't mean to pick apart, you know, your
pick
there.
I would have liked that movie just so much more if it weren't for that awful fucking, was it King Einan? I don't remember his name, but it was the guy.
It's definitely one of the better dragon movies.
Oh, certainly.
There. I mean, it was better than Reign of Fire.
with Batman and Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. It'd be cool if Batman was actually in that instead of it being Christian
Bale. It's
better
than Dungeons and Dragons.
But you know what? What I got to give Reign of Fire, and I'll give it this over Dragonheart even, is Reign of Fire had that awesome scene when Matthew McConaughey was being the badass. And he had the wonderful slow-mo. You know, he was jumping up and going to chop the dragon's head off and just jump, ate him. I have to admit,
that was funny.
Yeah, and it was like the Deep Blue scene, you know, Sam Jackson getting eaten scene.
Like,
it cracked
sweet.
Me the fuck
I didn't
up.
Expect that, and that movie gains points.
Yeah,
yes.
No, I mean, I get what you're saying about Dragonheart, I think I like it probably better than Ethan. I just had such a hard time with the bad guy. Mm-hmm. He sucked.
Yeah, David Thewlis just dropped the ball in it. It's too bad. And that happens in these fantasy movies sometimes.
Sure.
And it's
well, look at Jeremy Irons in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons in Dungeons & Dragons chews up the scenery.
Oh, yeah.
And we know he's a fucking good actor.
And he was... I liked him in that movie.
But you could tell he did not give a shit.
No.
He was just like, fuck it, I'm under contract, I'm just going to fucking do this.
I like
this.
Jeremy Irons in that movie.
And even him just throwing that shit out there is better than everybody else in that movie.
I liked him in that movie.
The magic.
And I liked Richard O'Brien in that movie.
Yes.
Those were both good performances. But other than that movie sucked a fart out of my ass, use an Ethan colloquialism.
Well, what's your number six again?
My number six was Conan the... Barbarian.
The original.
Not the Destroyer.
The original with Arnold.
Well, the good one.
Right. Well, the new one wasn't bad.
I'm sorry. I haven't seen the new one. Yes.
No, the new one. I did like the new one.
The John Milius one. What year did that come out? 80-something.
82?
Yeah, 82. I mean, what's best in life, Ethan?
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentation of the women.
And a good kill shit with swords movie.
Fuck yeah.
And this is there for me. It's a lot of fun, and how many cooler scenes in cinematic history are there when Schwarzenegger chops off James Earl Jones's head with a dull broken sword?
Oh yeah,
and then throws him down the stairs.
When I talked about Conan, the new Conan the Barbarian who came out, I sort of talked a bit about this, and I love the old Conan stories.
I haven't read any of them.
The problem with them and the Conan stories are great. Uh-huh. They're so atmospheric that it is incredibly difficult to capture that feeling in a movie. That movie, the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger, the first one, is the closest they've come to capturing that, the feeling of Hyboria, feeling of the Conan stories. But I sort of reiterate, and the Conan the Barbarian story did a great job. It gave him a backstory, but it still made him fucking Conan, for crying out loud. That you don't need to give Conan a backstory. Conan doesn't have a driving...
Was it in Conan the Barbarian or was it Conan the Destroyer where it either ended or began with him sitting on the throne? Which one was that?
That was Conan the Barbarian.
That really intrigued me.
Well, that movie is full of great iconic imagery from the Conan, pulp Conan stories, namely Frank Frazetta stuff. I mean, the image of him on the Tree of Woe is directly off of a story illustration.
Or probably from that one book, the Bible, you know, where it kind of looked like he was cut.
Well, no, Frazetta had a cover of Conan crucified to a tree like that.
Yeah, but it's so fucking reminiscent of the crucifixion of Christ. Come on.
And it was 1982.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I got to ask a question of Ethan. I mean, unfortunately, no, I got to leave you out of this because you're a youngin'.
But don't forget Max von Sydow, wasn't it?
Yeah, Max von Sydow and Mako, whatever his name is. Yeah. Did you see Conan the Destroyer as a child?
As a child, I think so.
Did you like it as a child?
No.
See, I did as a child, but then
for the longest time, I had only ever seen Conan the Barbarian edited for television.
For the longest time, I only ever saw Conan the Destroyer, and I'm like, these fucking movies suck. Because, like, when I was a kid, I was all like...
Fucking Chamberlain, everyone.
Yeah, I was just all like... When I was a kid, I was like, cool, they're killing shit with swords. And I got a little bit older, and I'm like, oh, well, so fucking what? This sucks. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I wish I'd make a good Conan movie. And somebody's all like, dumbass, have you seen Conan the Barbarian? I'm like, what's that? And I saw it, I'm all like, yeah, fuck Conan the Destroyer, and fuck Red Sonja, which was Shay's number one favorite sword fight of all time, but...
And I saw that fucking movie, and that movie was shit.
Yeah, it was shit. But I dig this movie. There's just so much good stuff about it, and it's full of Arnie-isms, and I'd be remiss to not talk about the wonderful commentary track with...
Wow, that's a great shot.
Yeah, Arnold, it sure is. Now, have you heard that commentary track, Noah?
No, I have not.
It's weight in gold. Yes. It's so fucking funny.
I think it's the only Arnold Schwarzenegger commentary track I know of. Unless
he did
one
on Terminator
2. T2? Okay.
Yeah, he did one on the T2 Blu-ray.
And yeah, the Conan the Barbarian one with Arnold, the commentary track's hysterical.
Yeah, and it's pretty much, you know...
It's just him and the director.
Well, you know, Milius is trying to talk about the art of it and everything, and then every so often Arnold would pop in with, you know... I'll always remember him talking about James Earl Jones. He's like, yeah, that guy's a good actor.
what else have I seen him in? And he's like, he's fucking Darth Vader. He's like, oh yeah, from the Star Wars. Like, yes, Arnold. Yeah, from the Star Wars.
And don't get me wrong, the new movie was not bad. I mean, I was expecting it to be a
is
a
it out on
pile
DVD
of
and
shit. Yeah, it came out Thanksgiving week.
I should rent it or something.
But the original Conan the Barbarian is still the closest adaptation because you just don't need to put this so much backstory into Conan. You just don't need to do that.
Kill and fuck.
Because Conan has three things in his head at any one given time. It's, I want to kill shit with swords, I want money, and I want women.
Yep.
That is his motivation. You don't need to give him any more than that.
He doesn't come across as a guy with a lot of internal
monologue.
He
does what he wants because he's 6.5 freaking feet tall and built like a brick shithouse.
Yeah.
And see, people don't tell him no.
Yeah.
But that's interesting, though, because if you read a lot of the old pulp stuff, like, his appearance actually changes, because half the story is he's like this lean, like, small sneak, at, like, where he's sneaking around and stuff.
Yeah, he's more of a thief.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love how the original stories portrayed magic, and that's one thing that fantasy films never really quite get. It's fucked up and wrong. Yeah. Don't cast magic. Magic is wrong, and in the stories anyway, and even in the movie, the movie you're talking about, it's that way too. Because I mean, you think the mental process for Conan is, this guy has wiggity magic powers. I need to put a sword through his head before he fucks something up involving me. That is what he does.
That is something that's really common, and it's a mistake about just like kind of like the offhanded way that magic is handled in films. I mean, you look at, you know, Harry Potter.
And in Conan the Barbarian, it's understated.
Yeah.
There's magic, it's there, but it's not, flashy and, you know, big
but it is
special
raw
effects. But it is there, and it's weird.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I do love that movie. It's a great movie.
It's a good movie, and I'd like to own it on.
It is on Blu-ray. Yeah,
it's certainly on DVD.
Yeah,
and I can't recall.
It's not a bad DVD either.
So cool. Well, that's why I chose it from number six. Let's bring us on into Ethan's number five.
My number five is in retrospect, I might have replaced this one with Conan, but
sure.
I'll go with what I put down.
Call the Conqueror.
Call the Conqueror. No. Oh, fuck. It's the 1988 Terry Gilliam movie, The Adventures of the Baron Munchausen.
Damn, that's a great movie.
You know, because you're talking fantasy, and, you know, this one sort of gets into sort of fables and folktale type of thing. But I think ultimately, because yes, you've got gods and goddesses in there, but it's such a fundamental frickin' fantasy movie. See, there are some guns in there, but it's not, you know, it's a Terry Gilliam movie. It's kind of fucked up.
Had we not done the time travel movie already, Time Bandits would have been on my list.
Oh,
it's not. But Terry Gilliam's hit and miss with you. For me, he's 95% hit. I think he's such an interesting director.
This movie is available on Blu-ray and DVD.
Hell, it's on Criterion. It was.
Only had a Criterion Laserdisc.
Oh, really? That's too bad.
So
great
but
movie.
Yeah, Adventures of the Baron Munchausen.
Go ahead, Noah.
Terry Gilliam. Go ahead, Noah.
No, that's I didn't even think of like putting that anywhere near my list. I wish I had, because that
such
movie,
a
I mean, Harry,
weird fucking movie.
It is, but it's not an off-putting weird movie.
Yeah,
a lot of people can be put off by Brazil. It's so
I like Brazil a lot though.
This one isn't quite that bad because it's fun. It's, you know, it's
I ought to have Brazil.
It's
on
odd.
The fucking list.
Odd is the best word to describe this movie.
Odd's better than weird, I'd say.
Yeah, but it's a good one, and that you know, that's why it ended up on number five on my list.
Cool. All right, Noah, what's your number five?
My number five is Willow.
Oh.
A fine and wonderful film.
I love that movie.
At number three on my list, actually.
Yeah, I love that movie. It's a good one. Ron Howard, 1988.
Directed by Ron Howard, yeah.
Well, Val Kilmer and
Joanne Whalley.
And he's not available on Blu-ray.
No.
Warwick Davis is in it.
Yep.
Kevin Pollak.
And talk about movies that have a bad rap.
Ooh. How can you not like this movie?
This movie got panned the fuck out of it when it came out.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
I liked it and I liked it 10 years ago, and I like it now.
I got two words. Mad Mardigan.
Mad motherfucking Mardigan, yeah.
Fuck y'all.
It was nominated for Best Effects and for Sound and Best Effects for Visual Effects in the 89 Oscars.
It's a damn
entertaining
movie.
I've always enjoyed that movie a lot.
Yeah, this is also a point where Val Kilmer was decent.
Yeah.
Hey, fuck you. Val Kilmer's still decent. He just doesn't do decent movies.
It's because he's a prick. Okay.
Yeah. Well, okay.
He's really hard to work with. That's why people don't work with him.
Well, anymore. I was going to say he's a prick, but I was going to say he's hard to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Willow. Willow's damn fun.
It's a really good movie.
It's number three on my list, and obviously it's another 80s movie, but I think the thing that I really liked about Willow
was General Kale
was the universe felt lived in.
Oh, yeah.
It had history to it, and it felt... It's hard to say it, but it felt real.
It did, and it also, at the same time, one of the things that, and I can't put a finger on it, and I'm not even sure if I'm going to be able to articulate what I'm trying to say, is I really felt the dividing line between the, well, what were the little people called? The
Pecks?
What? The Pecks. Yeah, out of the way, Peck. One of the best lines.
Out of the way, Peck.
Yeah, but the little people and the bigger people, Dakini, or I don't remember.
Dakini,
but I did feel the dividing line between the two of them. It did not feel like a world where they lived together happily. No,
right.
Because I mean it's horrible because we do live in a world of racism and bigotry and stuff like that.
Right.
But I do kind of like the whole peck as a derogatory word for the little people.
I think it's definitely an aspect of these movies is if when you start adding in the fantasy races like dwarves and elves and all that stuff. It starts to become, you start to sort of get further and further away from it and go, this just is kind of too weird for me.
And
movies have done that well.
And this one, I think I find Willow to be among the most approachable fantasy films. It's a good one.
It's so hard to do other races, like when, you know, you're dealing with all human actors and...
Yeah.
Who wrote that?
Who wrote that? I will tell you in one moment.
Why don't you go ahead and keep talking and I'll look it up.
Oh!
I want to say it was. I thought Ron Howard worked on it.
I want to say William Goldwyn, but it's all right.
How about the screenplay was done by Bob Dolman and the guy who came up with the story?
Lucas.
George,
I knew that. He also produced it and stuff. Yeah,
Bob
Dolman. That's right.
And I know there was a sequel novel.
Yes, I didn't read it, but I actually heard it wasn't too bad.
And this is one of those movies that gets a bad rap, and I don't understand why.
I think it's because it tends to get played on local network stations in like severely nastily cut versions, so you don't see the movie in like all the greatness that it is.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that's definitely got a soft spot in my heart. It's got great action, a great soundtrack to it. It's just a fun movie, and you know. You've got a lot of fantasy elements in there. There's magic, but it's not hokey. They take it seriously, and there's a fine line there somewhere where you cross it from it being, oh crap, there's a sorcerer too.
Yep.
Oh hey, there's a sorcerer. Whatever. What's he gonna do? Cast fireball?
Yeah.
But when it's in Willow, you know, it's all sort of understated. But
and I love the I've always when I was a kid, it's something that it's, you know, like when you're younger to when you're an older adult, you know, like your sensibilities and shit change.
Yeah.
But one of the things that has not changed in me is I always loved the fact that Willow outsmarted and cheated Morgana or whatever the bad bitch was called when he made the baby disappear. I always enjoyed that part of it, and I don't know why, because it just showed that it was like he was intelligent and cunning, and she was powerful, but he was able to outthink her, and I always enjoyed that. That's a cool little element.
And I will always point at, when talking sword and sorcery films, one of my favorite action sequences in any sword and sorcery film is the whole defending the castle.
Yeah, but I also, with that weird dragon thing that grew out of that troll.
I love that bit. That whole part is just fun and entertaining.
I always liked the sled scene.
Yeah, the sled
and
scene
I love
that
Matt Mardigan ended up in the fucking snowball. That always cracks me up. That's a good movie, and it's a great choice. Great choice.
Yeah, great choice. I love Willow. Noah, great movie.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it brings us down to my number five.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if we're gonna call it spoiler since we're going, but The Lord of the Rings is not gonna show up on my list. They're fine movies for what they are, but I've read the books a couple of times and they just don't do it for me. So
we get the first Hobbit next year.
And we do get the first Hobbit next year. But and maybe if we're doing this in a year or two from now, you know, the first Hobbit might be on my list or something.
Sure.
But until then, I'm going to have to settle for the 1977 Rankin Bass film of The Hobbit, the animated one. Now, I'm not sure if that was animated or I don't know if that was theatrical or not, but you know, it doesn't fucking matter because I wasn't alive in 1977.
I think it was because the Lord of the Rings one was.
Yes, definitely was.
And I think the Hobbit one's good, but I remember it's another one that as a kid it scared me.
Oh, I really
and
dug
that. And
that
sort of colors my perception of it now because Gollum was terrifying.
Yeah, it was by Theodore, if I remember correct. Yeah. The
name and it was rotoscoping, right?
Yeah. It's like I think that the Lord of the Rings are fine films, are not made by me. I do not think that the novels or I do not think that the movies captured the feeling of the books, and I don't think that the cartoons captured the feel of the books. But I do think that the cartoon of The Hobbit actually was, you know, they captured the feel of it. I mean, because of the comfort of Bilbo and living in his little hole and how big of a pain in the ass it was for him to go out and not to get his 7 meals a day. And I've always been a big – I don't know why I've always been a big fan of Bard the Bowman. He's an interesting character.
We know you got passed up to be.
I did, and it's a fucking tragedy. I mean, there should have been fucking Liam Neeson as Abraham Lincoln, and I should have played Bard.
Yeah.
But this is a movie I like. I like it a lot, and I just... Not a lot of people have seen it, and when they do, a lot of them are put off by it. Because they think the animation looks weird, because the Hobbits kind of look oddball-ish.
Oh, see, I always loved the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings movies. I think the art style is fantastic, although the Lord of the Rings.
It does get some getting used to. If you're not used to that kind of animation, it can take some getting used to.
Not for nothing, but a lot of people aren't a big fan of Return of the King.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like the Return of the King one. And when I say Return of the King, I'm talking the animated one.
Yeah.
Return of the King cracks me up simply because of the intro song of Frodo of the Nine Fingers and the Ring of Doom.
Yeah. The reason why I like that movie as much as I do is because I liked that it was an actual continuation of The Hobbit. The Lord of the Rings and the Two Towers are standalone.
Yeah.
But the Return of the King was a continuation of the story told in The Hobbit, this film I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this movie, and it's funny. I might be fucking myself here, but a lot of Lord of the Rings fans have a holier-than-thou attitude.
Oh, yeah.
They come across as, you know, and especially if you're on the Star Wars side of the fence, and they're all like, yeah, Return of the King won Best Picture. What'd your Star Wars win, faggot? And I'm like, you know, shut up. Just shut up. And I'm not going there. And they have this really dismissive attitude of these films, I think they're very well made, and I especially like The Hobbit. So I chose it in my number 5, and I think it's a really good movie.
All right. Well, there you go. So I guess we're to my number 4.
Sure. Why not?
Yep.
My number 4 is yet another 80s installment.
Yeah.
In fact, the rest of my movies are all from the 80s. This one is the 1982 Jim Henson Frank Oz film, The Dark Crystal.
Oh, hell yes.
Good movie. Really good movie.
That's actually, I don't know, maybe I ordered my list wrong, but that's up on my number 9.
It's a good one. Once again, off-putting and weird.
Yeah, off-putting and weird, but
not as
solid,
bad as Labyrinth.
But it's a solid fantasy movie.
Sure, it is.
I mean, it is one of those that you know, on one end you have you know, Conan the Barbarian or Willow, where it's all real people.
Mm-hmm.
Where this one is all puppets, and so you don't have real people in it at all, and so. You have this again.
Was
you
Sir
have this
Didymus
very
and Ambrosia
weird...
in Labyrinth or
yes.
Dark Crystal?
That was in Labyrinth.
Yeah, that always cracked me up. But
yeah.
Go ahead.
But the Dark Crystal, you had great visuals. You had this great, just eerie feeling to the whole movie. But again, it felt lived in. It felt rich. It felt like it had history to it. It didn't feel like, oh, hey, let's do a generic sword and sorcery movie. It had some interesting stuff in there. I mean, the Garthim were just freaking cool. And I always thought
they
that
show up on your top 6 movie villains list, or was that Jeff's?
That was probably Jeff.
The Garthim?
Yeah, the Garthim are
now thinking of the Skeksis. They
the
showed
Skeksis.
Up. Yeah, okay.
But the Skeksis in this movie are creepy little motherfuckers.
Sure they are.
And I like just the dynamic of the movie is you had this great connection to everything. And, you know, it's kind of an intense movie if when you're watching it as a kid.
See, this is one I probably haven't seen this since I was younger than 10.
Sure. And it's one that's readily available. You get on DVD and Blu-ray.
So. It's probably coming on Blu-ray pretty soon. Oh, it's already on Blu-ray. Yeah. Okay.
Has there been any word on the follow-up?
They're still working on it. They're still working.
They are still working on it.
They've had that thing in the works for like 10 years. So.
When did this movie come out?
This movie came out in 1982.
Okay, so it's certainly pre-Jim Henson's death. Did he direct it?
He was co-director with Frank Oz.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew that. Okay, cool.
So, yeah, that is my number four, The Dark Crystal.
Fantastic. Noah, what's your number four?
My number four is the first three movies of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
And Ethan and I have butted heads on this one. I like the first one the best. Then I like the fourth one. And then I really huge drop, hate the second one. And the third one I want to shoot in the dick with a bazooka.
I think they just get progressively worse as you watch them.
I like the fourth one because of Barbosa. And that's it. I liked Barbosa in that one a lot.
I can't comment on the fourth one.
I haven't seen it.
I mean, and I'll concede that the second and third ones were I probably could have left it off, but then fine. You know what? Screw it. I'll backtrack. We'll say the first one, Pirates of the Caribbean.
And I don't want to influence you. I'm just saying what I feel.
See, and it's not one that comes to mind when I think sword and sorcery. That's a pirate movie.
But there's certainly magic. There's certainly swords. And you're absolutely. I mean, this is appropriate on this list.
Oh yeah,
quite so.
I'm not saying it shouldn't be on this list at all.
God damn you, Noah! What the fuck are you thinking?
Yeah, no. It's a good movie.
That's a real good movie.
I love that first movie. Fun fucking movie.
I mean, how many performances can you think of in the last 15 years that were like Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow?
Yeah.
I mean, it was electrifying. It was so much fun. It was a great role.
Yeah. He's fantastic. Jeffrey Rush is unbelievable. Yeah. And honestly, I will argue that he's what redeemed the third one. Was Jeffrey Rush. I mean, so
there was just too much gone. I mean, as much as I like the Jeffrey Rush shit in the third one, it was just too much bad stuff.
And for me, the first movie had this great kinetic energy to
it. Oh yeah.
And that just was lost in second and third movies.
Well, the first one was, you know, normal movie length, an hour and a half to 2 hours long.
The first one?
Yeah, wasn't it? Was it long? How long was the first one?
I don't have it in front of me, but I know it was over 2 hours.
Was it really?
Pirates of the Caribbean, Crystal Black Pearl was 143 minutes.
See?
Holy
two hours,
shit!
43 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever knew that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But how long are the other two?
Let's see. On Stranger Tides, we don't care about Stranger Tides.
Don't tell me that they're about the same length.
Dead Man's Chest was 151 minutes.
How long was the first one? 143.
43. So Dead Man's Chest was longer.
Okay.
And At World's End was even longer than that. It was 169.
Well, then they just fucking. Then they're worse than I said. Because I had no idea the first one was that long.
Mm-hmm.
I seriously thought it was like 90 minutes or, well, 2 hours ish.
Well, it's because you don't notice it because you're enjoying the movie.
Because it's a good movie. But yeah. I literally thought I was going insane when the second one came out and it was making all that money and it was getting all those rave reviews. I'm like, this movie sucks. What is wrong with people? And wow.
Mm-hmm. And the second one's got fun parts to it, but the first movie is fun from beginning to end.
That's illuminating. I had no idea it was that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. Good on you, Gore Verbinski, but, you know, wow.
Yeah, it just goes to show you that if the movie captures you, you know, if it's got that energy to it,
I'm flabbergasted.
It could be 2.5 hours long, and
that's
you don't
flabbergasting.
Care.
I had no idea.
Yeah. I like that movie. It's a good
continue.
One.
Continue. I'm sorry.
No, it. Yeah, I mean, and you know, of course, you know, it's got all the classic elements. But one of the things I loved about it is that Keira Knightley plays such a strong female character. She starts out as this like you know, very prim, very proper, and then by the end of it, she's just like, "Fuck you, I'm." You know, I'm going with my guy. I'm gonna the pirate thing, and they make she has great chemistry.
I mean, and not to turn this into a stuff that sucks list, but you know that's you know yet another thing that went wrong with the
with the second, third, and fourth is, you know, he just felt so. I don't know what the word is. It just felt so artificial when she became the Pirate King. I mean, they even called her the fucking Pirate King, for Christ's sake. You know, I mean, that was just. I do love the first one, though. I mean, and I don't want that to come across as I don't, because I thought it was a great flick.
That's my number, whatever we're on. Four.
Number four. So, Aaron, what's your number four?
My number four is a movie that does not suck.
Okay.
That narrows it down.
How about a movie I don't have a lot to say about, because I have not seen it in a good 5 years? But it's by one of my favorite directors, who did pop up in my top six favorite films list. It's came out in, you know, yet again, what another 1980s film, 1985, the Ridley Scott film, A Legend. I know that Ethan does not like it even a little bit.
I love Ridley Scott.
I love Ridley Scott
movies, but occasionally he puts one out, and that is another one. I've given it a shot. I've tried watching it again.
Tom Cruise,
I fucking hate that movie.
And Tom Cruise is like an anchor of shittiness in that movie.
Oh God, yes.
But Tim Curry pulls it out of the water for me.
Tim Curry's great.
He was fantastic in that movie, and it's a good fantasy film. I mean, it's all there. There's a stupid wooden performance by a phenomenally horrible actor, a horrible performer. But the girl is Mia Sara, right?
Mia Sara.
It was Mia Sara and Tom Cruise, and I can't even tell you. And it was a beautifully composed film. I mean, it was well thought out.
Beautiful.
Honestly, it suffers from something that apparently is a Ridley Scott thing. It suffers from the weak, shitty lead you don't care about. You want to see everything else. The same thing happened in Kingdom of Heaven. You know, I did not give a fuck about Orlando Bloom in that movie, but I liked that movie because everyone else. I did not give a fuck about Tom Cruise in this movie, but I liked everything else, especially Tim Curry. He was incredible. What was he called? Darkness or The Devil or I don't know. He was so cool in that movie.
Darkness.
The makeup in that's fucking phenomenal. You don't know that that's Tim Curry. Quite frankly,
what sucks. But
I think it's a testament to the makeup, a testament to Tim Curry as an actor.
But you know, you got to think about it.
I liked Tim Curry in it.
Tim Curry was great.
Don't get me wrong.
It looked good. It had a good story.
There's no the hero just wasn't there for me. And
I agree with
nothing
you.
Nothing carried it beyond that.
But
for me.
A fantasy is so much more than the lead. Protagonist.
Yeah. But for me, a sword and sorcerer, you need to have a strong protagonist to root for, because you got to go, Willow.
And
you know, I want Willow to win.
And
you know?
I want to get lost in that world, and when it's done so well to where, you know, your avatar into that world sucks, it doesn't matter, because, you know, you have this scenery, you have, you know, this fantastic villain, you have this beautiful love interest. You have this amazing backdrop.
Mia Sara is gorgeous.
And I it's, you know, it's fucking Ridley fucking Scott.
Oh, yeah.
That dude can direct everything. And
Prometheus. I look forward to that.
I don't know, man. I we're just going to have to agree to disagree, because I thought it was a breathtaking film. And
visually stunning.
Do you know what's stupid here is we're agreeing with each other.
Yeah.
But we're like, but we're just kind of at different points of
we
view.
We both agree that
Tom Cruise
is visually stunning, and Tom Cruise is awful, and Ridley Scott kicks ass, and so does Tim Curry. But for me, I just fucking can't stand that movie.
And I just. And I would rather live in a movie. I would rather live in a world where that movie exists and have to deal with Tom Cruise, but also get those other wonderful things, than it's just not to be there altogether.
Sure.
So all that's right. My number four. Have you seen this one, Noah?
I've seen. That's one of the movies that I probably haven't seen all the way through. I've seen, you know, bits and pieces of it here and there. I actually never knew that demon thing is Tim Curry.
I know that's Tim Curry. I've heard Tim Curry talk about the role, and he said, you know, he loved it. It's fucking Tim Curry. He eats scenery for breakfast.
Yeah,
and he said the one thing that, you know, he always regretted about that movie is they covered up his eyes. He always wanted to keep his eyes, and they wound up putting like those funky ass contacts in there. And I can see Tim Curry as clearly as I can see Ethan right now in that movie.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that when I first saw the movie, I knew it was Tim Curry. But, you know, I mean, I can't say for sure. But he's a great villain.
It's another one that Ridley Scott has a history of studios fucking with his movies. And
sure.
That's definitely one that got ripped apart.
Yeah.
So
What movie did I... You know, I don't think I realized that Ridley Scott directed Collateral until, like, last week.
He didn't direct Collateral.
Are you? Okay. Well, all right. I thought he did. Who did? He
didn't. I want to say it was Michael Mann.
It was. Excuse me. It was Michael Mann. I didn't realize Michael Mann directed until last week.
Are we thinking of the same Collateral?
It was another director that I loved.
Yeah.
And I also had Michael Mann on my list. But cool. That's my number four. So that brings us down to Ethan's number three.
My number three was Willow.
Okay. So, Noah, what's your number three?
My number three is The Black Cauldron.
Okay.
And I will completely fess up that I've never seen it.
That's the Disney movie, right?
Yep.
The good
one. Yes, it is.
Real good one.
1985 adaptation of a Lloyd Alexander book, which also is one of my favorite book series. They're young adult, but they have got a whole lot of charm. We never really had that much in the way of like big names. Nigel Hawthorne's in it, John Byner, you know, a few here and there, and it's just you know. It's your class. Given a task and trying to find, you know, the magic item to help save the world. It's a very standard story, but I always found it as just an absolutely, absolutely charming and just funny and just spectacular movie. And if you get a chance to see it, the animation is outstanding. I mean, this was like Disney animation at its finest.
Yeah, as I understand, it's one of the more intense Disney movies.
It's a good one.
I've never seen it.
If I was going to put a Disney film on here, I'd probably put Sword of the Stone, but, you know,
that's just me. I love Sword of the Stone.
It's a good one. I love the mage battle in that.
Fuck yeah.
Honestly, if you do get a chance, look up The Black Cauldron. It's really just it's a spectacular. It really is.
It's probably cool. In that stupid vault, but yeah, it's totally worth checking out.
That sounded like fun.
Yeah.
That's my number three. Ethan, there's a quick screenshot for you, which you might like.
Huh.
Why
don't we pause so I can make sure I don't have any dead cats?
Oh. Okay.
Want me to mark it? No, it's all right. All right. Looking at your screen capture here.
I mean, this is just like one of those things that has that gorgeous old school Disney hand on. You, I'm going to put you outside because I hate you. But yeah, that's.
It's slowly loading. Hang on.
Okay.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
It's just one that I've never seen, and it was actually one I never heard of when I was a kid growing up.
I don't even.
Oh, I forgot.
Hi, dogs.
We've had fucking dog or cat battles all night. I've got Trevor in our bathroom. Trevor's in the bathroom. Skeletor's in the office. Dee Dee's in our room. And Poof is out here.
Bella, off equipment.
Where were we?
Black Cauldron.
But were we done with Black Cauldron?
Yeah, I just said it's one that I have never seen and never really heard of it when I was a kid.
Real good movie.
Really good movie.
Okay. So
your number three.
My number three is 1988 Willow.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, we already talked about it.
We
get
did.
Down.
Did you have anything to add?
It kicks all kinds of ass.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the toys?
Yes, vaguely.
They were made out of metal and they hurt a lot. What's that? Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. The toys were made out of metal, and they, like, I remember stepping on them a lot, and they hurt. They were little toys made out of metal, and they didn't have, like, points of articulation or anything.
Yeah.
But and I had the Mad Mardigan, it came on a horse, it kicked all kinds of ass.
Nice.
I'm sorry, the General Kale.
Yes.
Always been into villains.
All right, well, I guess we're to my number two?
Yes, sir.
1985 must have been a good year, because my number two is a fantasy movie that I have not watched in for bloody ever. It is not available on... It is out of print on DVD, and it is not available on Blu-ray in the United States. It's available on a nice Blu-ray in Britain. But it's 1985, directed by Richard Donner, Lady Hawk.
That's a good fucking movie. With Broderick, right?
With Matthew Broderick, Rutger Hauer, Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good... I haven't seen that in the Coons age, but it's a good one.
It's one that immediately popped to mind when I was thinking about this, and I was like, you know, I really dig that movie, and it's got swords, it's got sorcery in it, but the sorcery is way understated. And it's, you know, it's a great love story. You got Rutger Hauer just as this badass motherfucker in the movie. And I just got to say, dude throws a two-handed sword at the end of the movie. Come on. It's one of those movies that was done, yes, it's magic. There's magic in it, but it's set. It feels more like set historically because I mean it's in France, and you have the prison of Aquila and whatnot. But it's a fun fantasy film, and you have this great love story, this curse going on, and you have great heroes in it that have an interesting tragedy to them. I love Lady Hawk. It is just an absolutely amazing movie. And I mean, another one. You can watch it on like Amazon Prime and stuff like that. And
I remember the Laserdisc at Miracle Video.
Yeah.
Just like sitting there, nobody wanted it.
Nope.
Good fucking movie, though.
It's never had a good version ever come out on DVD or anything like that. But Blu-ray is out in Britain.
Who'd you say directed that?
Richard Donner.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
Huh. That's awesome.
Yep.
And it's also, it's got Leo McKern. It's got Alfred Molina in it.
Yeah,
Alfred Molina
is
back when he was skinny.
Alfred Molina is the wolf trapper, and Leo McKern is the drunk priest.
Father,
and it's a great movie. It's just great, and the magic in it is very understated, but it's a huge element in the story. You've got a great villain in it with the bishop, and you know you just have this. It's some great battle scenes, it just, words don't describe how much I really enjoy this movie, and I totally need to sit down and watch it again, so. But Lady Hawk, 1985, Richard Donner, great movie.
It is a good one. That is a very good one. Now it's down to my number two?
It's down to Noah's number two.
Okay, Noah, what's your number? My number two?
My number two is actually a movie that came out in 2010, How to Train Your Dragon.
That's a good movie.
That's a good one.
If you haven't seen it, go see it. It's just, I mean, that movie, I couldn't stop laughing for the entire movie. It was absolutely fun. It captures the essence of a real, I mean, I don't want to say entry level, fantasy movie. I mean, it's definitely a kids movie, but it's not at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's DreamWorks, and DreamWorks has always succeeded at making the kids movies that are not just kids. Sure. But I loved it. I just thought it was a great movie.
See, and I guess when I was making this list, I sort of intentionally left the kids movies out of this. I wanted to go for the more sort of classical, an attempt at a serious take on it. So. But that is a great movie. I really enjoyed How to Train Your Dragons. It's a lot of fun.
I did too. I don't know that it can really show up on my list, but it's really good.
It's for me, it's one of those movies I watch all the time. I have the Blu-ray, mm-hmm. and I will say the Blu-ray, when converted into 3D, looks beautiful. No. It really does.
I do have the Blu-ray. Well, Chloe's got the Blu-ray of that, but you know.
Very nice.
Yeah, well, it's...
Aaron, what's your number two?
Well, my list got off track somewhere, because I'm going to have to pick something for my number two that doesn't really feel quite like a number two, and I don't really know how it happened. And it's on. Unfortunately, it's one that showed up on a previous list, and it doesn't really fit the... I don't know, it doesn't really fit the mold of what we've been talking too much lately. And I don't remember the year. I want to say 93, 94... But it was a Coen Brothers film, The Hudsucker Proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not the swords and it's not the swords and shields and shit, but it is dealing with angels from another world, and it's dealing with magic, and it's dealing with, like, you know, the wonder of the world. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I love this movie. It was my favorite favorite Hudsucker Proxy movie.
Favorite Coen Brothers.
My favorite Coen Brothers movie.
Right.
And I talked it to death when we did that, and to me it feels kind of out of place as my number two on my fantasy films list. It strikes me more as like a you know, like an honorable mention kind of choice. But something happened on my list, and it got away from me, and it's the only one I have left that I really feel comfortable putting that high on a list. So that's my number two, and I love that movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out. But don't expect swords and Arnold Schwarzenegger and
Bruce Campbell is in it.
Bruce motherfucking Campbell's in it too.
Yeah,
yeah, it's That's actually one of my favorite. I'd rank that in my probably at least top 20 of all time.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful movie that nobody likes.
It really is.
Alrighty. Well, so, I guess we're down to my number one.
Our number ones.
This movie, still back in the 80s, I was pleasantly surprised to find out that they did finally release it on DVD back in 2009. It is not on Blu-ray. Let me take a quick look. Yes, it is the only animated movie to make it onto my list. But it is, you talked Rankin and Bass.
Sure.
This is a Rankin and Bass one, but it is generally one that people don't know. It is Flight of Dragons.
That's a good
came
one.
Out in 1982.
That's a real good one. I
fucking love this movie.
I saw that in the theater in the animated film festival that I saw in Overland Park like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah,
and it was breathtaking in the theater.
Before this DVD release in 2009, it was only available on VHS from, I believe, when it came out about 1996.
Sounds about
right. On VHS. And it's obviously, it's billed as a kid's movie, but
no.
I think it's just wonderful.
It's just a movie.
It's about a writer in Boston who gets sucked into this fantasy universe.
Mm-hmm.
He is brought in by magic into this world where magic is dying and science is taking over. And so you have these great wizards. You have the yellow wizard, the blue wizard, the green wizard, and the red wizard, who all have dragons, get together and are trying to basically make this one last utopia of magic. Except the red wizard, who is this evil guy, wants to destroy science, destroy the world, and show everyone that he's black and evil and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the movie is called Flight of Dragons because it's about this. He's calling all these dragons to him, the bad guy is. And for me, it's something that really heavily influenced me, especially in like gaming with Dungeons and Dragons and universes and whatnot, because it explains a lot about the anatomy and the physiology of dragons. It's based on a book, apparently, that I've never read. But in it, it's really interesting because the main character basically gets turned into a dragon at one point. And he has to learn how to fly, make fire, and he finds out that the reason dragons sleep on gold is because it's a big soft metal that is comfortable to them. And
right.
I thought that was just kind of an interesting thing to throw in there, and I totally stole that and use it in my games.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it makes sense.
They have to eat limestone to help generate fire, things like that. It's really interesting. It's a great movie. I'm so happy it's on DVD. I need to totally go pick it up. A great, great movie. It's got, speaking of, he died just last week, Colonel Potter.
Oh, yeah.
Is the voice of the Green Wizard in a movie. And John Ritter, who is also dead, is the voice of the hero. Great, wonderful movie. I really, really enjoy it. It's definitely a solid number one fantasy movie on my list. So
it's a really good one.
Flight of Dragons, 1982.
I'm going to have to check that one out.
Yeah, I'm so happy it's on DVD now.
Yeah,
I can get an actual legal copy of it now.
Yeah, I went up to an animated film festival, and it's been years ago. I mean,
I was first exposed to it when we caught it. It was shown on TV, like on the Disney Channel or something like that, and we recorded it. We had a really crappy record off TV VHS copy of it for a long time.
Well,
and that's where I got familiarized with it.
I went to a film festival. It seems to me like it was about 10 years ago or so, and I went to go see it because it was the first time there was a whole bunch of the Disney shorts playing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I messed up telling my ride what time to pick me up. And I had like three, or like I think I had 2 or 3 hours to kill, and they were also playing this, and I watched it, and I thought it was really good. It was really
I love
cool.
It. Yeah,
good movie.
An awesome movie. It's one I definitely try to show to my fantasy loving friends. It's a
sure.
great movie. So. Well, Noah, what's your number one?
My number one is one of my favorite. This probably ranks in my top 10 movies of all time. It just came out on DVD, Blu-ray, I believe, last year, celebrating its like 23rd anniversary or something. Andre the Giant, Cary Elwes, Gotta be the Princess Bride.
That's my number one as well.
I intentionally left it off my list because my I have gone on at length about how much I love that movie.
And to me, I thought about leaving it off my list.
It is great.
When I entered into like our discussion tonight, it was not on my list. Mm-hmm. And Willow was going to be my number one. And then I got to thinking about it, and it showed up too low on your guys' fucking list. I'm all like, "Well, you know what? No, I got to get
three on mine.
No. I got to get the Princess Bride in here. It's one of those movies that's quote unquote important. It's quote unquote important to me. It's the only movie that my oldest sister Stephanie really loves. And I remember her like sending me on an errand one time and saying, "If you can find me this movie, I'll buy you anything that you want." Sure. And I found it, and she like, and you got to understand my sister Stephanie. She's not an affectionate person. She's not mean, but she's not an affectionate person. And I found it at like Walmart or wherever the hell we were. And I said, "Hey, look, is this it?" And she like knocked it out of my hands and gave me the biggest fucking hug I've ever gotten in my life. And it's a wonderful movie. I mean,
To be cliche, it's a magical movie.
It is a magical movie. And I could not trust a person that does not like this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can see somebody saying, "Yeah, it's not really for me," but if somebody's like, "That movie sucks and fuck you for liking it," I'd be like, "You're a Nazi," or "There's just really something wrong with you morally." Because I love that movie.
It's really one of the most.
Yeah.
And I've always known that, and every time I think it or say it, it's just like, really? That's a Rob Reiner movie, huh?
I mean, what gets me as a kicker is Mandy Patinkin in it.
Oh, yeah.
As Inigo Montoya.
"You killed my father.
Talk about a quotable scene.
Wallace Shawn.
I love Wallace Shawn.
Mm-hmm. Christopher Guest.
Christopher Guest, a six-fingered man.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It is a movie that has just injected itself into pop culture, it's one of those movies that tanked at theaters.
Yep,
and
it
came out on VHS and was like,
it was one of the first movies
took
that
off.
It was one of like the first home medias that really found itself on a home media instead of in the theater. I mean, it's happened numerous times.
It's definitely one of those movies you want to share.
Oh yeah,
I know when I have kids, I'm showing them this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten your hands on the Blu-ray yet at all, either of you?
I do have the Blu-ray.
Yeah. I actually have to tell you, I didn't realize it was on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's out on Blu-ray, and the special features are really fantastic. I don't remember if it was like the 20th anniversary or
Blu-ray too. I mean, you can go out and buy it for like less than $10.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Probably
find
it at Walmart.
Cheap Blu-ray. But I mean, there's a retrospective of the movie of a bunch of the actors sitting and talking about, how they felt making the movie. Mandy Patinkin pretty much is sitting there and he almost cries because he basically says, "I will probably never top that movie."
He won't top it.
This movie came up when we were talking our favorite sword fights.
I was about ready to ask if it did.
Oh, yeah.
Because what a fucking...
I'm not left-handed.
I'm not left-handed either. Huh, you study Agrippa? As do I, it's a wonderful, it's a great story. There's nothing in that movie that's not really enjoyable.
Peter Falk and Fred Savage just in like the three.
Did he finally fucking die or not?
Peter Falk?
Did he? It was just a few months ago, right?
Yeah.
Are you fucking with
your
phone?
Peter Falk passed away June 23rd. This year.
Yeah. It seemed like when he passed away, I was all like, huh, wasn't he already dead?
My phone decided that it was no longer on the 3G network, and he lost its signal, and now was trying to find it again.
Ah, gotcha. But no,
I'm back on the extended network.
This is a movie that would be fun to show to people if they haven't seen it, but I don't think I know anybody that hasn't seen it. I mean, what kind of childhood would somebody have not growing up with the Princess Bride? What year did it come out?
88,
87, something like that.
And hold on, 87.
And what year were you born?
85.
This is what I did see in the theater.
It's like a $13 DVD.
Right the
and
fuck
I'm
are.
Sure you can get it at Walmart for $11.
Yeah, my ex had not ever seen it.
The Blu-ray has the DVD on it too.
Oh, cool.
So it has the Blu-ray and DVD. It's one of those.
It's a dual set. My ex had never seen it. I went out, bought this just for the purpose of showing her initially, and it blew her away. So
I mean, I'm not trying to oversell it, but I cannot think of ever meeting a person in my life that didn't like it.
Yeah,
ever.
And it's one of those movies that I could genuinely say is just a joy.
It is. I mean, it's. I mean, if somebody told me to come up with the perfect movie,
mm-hmm.
it would probably show up because it's one of the most universally acclaimed movies. It's a joy to watch, and motherfucker, I want to watch it right now. I mean, it's a really good one.
Yeah, the Billy Crystal,
Matt
Bricklebacks, yeah.
And I'll and it's
have
a
fun storming the castle.
Take it a walk. It'll take
a miracle. I actually,
it's a quotable freaking movie.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it's a very quotable movie. Honestly, if I'll say goodbye to people by going, you know, they'll be like, yeah, we're going now. I'm like, I'll just say, have fun storming the castle. They look at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you go, really? Come on.
Come on.
Get yeah, some culture.
I mean, and, you know, it's, you know, yet again, one of our asides, but I had a copy of Ghostbusters on VHS that I taped off a TV. Mm-hmm. And one of the commercials I will always remember on there was the network premiere of The Princess Bride, and they showed the whole Billy Crystal door scene. And
mm-hmm.
yeah. I love that shit.
There is a board game available right now.
Oh, yeah?
Have either of you ever read the novel, out of curiosity?
I have.
I have not. Oh. My brother has. I've heard it's a really fun read.
The original is not a fun read. There was a novelization written. I don't know if it was written off of the movie or how it works, but there is a novelization of a grandfather.
See, and as I understand it, there is not an original novel.
There is an original novel.
There is an original novel.
The novel that you've read that is a abridged version,
yeah.
is an abridged version of a novel that doesn't exist.
Yes.
I'll be damned.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I've only ever read the abridged version. Yeah.
Real book.
Huh, that's kind of neat. S. Morgan Stern, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Way he wrote it.
Huh. That's
there
really
is
neat.
No S. Morgan Stern. There is, yeah. So it's funny because he tells, if you read the latest edition of the novel, he talks about, you know, how he goes to S. Morgan Stern's, his estate, and that, you know,
somebody really taking advantage of the medium they work in.
Oh,
I mean, Christopher Nolan does it all the time, but yeah. But you know, that's really interesting.
It's a literary version of a mockumentary. You know?
Yeah, it's really kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. He even goes so far as to talk about how Andre the Giant did research into the original the real person on which his character is based, mm-hmm. and like how he, quote unquote, actually climbs the cliffs of insanity, and all this and all this very funny stuff about Andre the Giant, and all this, you know, it's like, oh yeah, when we were filming the cliff scene in this part, he climbed it on his own without the harness, and we asked him, you know, why would he do it, and it's just all this like very very funny, like Ethan said, almost mockumentary yeah. stuff, and it's really really.
Well, I'd like to check that out then. That sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's obviously I'm a big fan of the film, and so is Noah. That's why we chose it as our number one. So
yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And like I said, I purposely left it off the list because I've gone on it. I went on at length about it, I think, in the last freaking episode of the episode before.
Yeah, that's a great, 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 great movie. So yeah. I guess that brings us down to the rundown of our list, and we're going to stick a fork in this bitch.
I know. You didn't put any Lord of the Rings on here. I sort of felt obligated. My number 10 is The Fellowship of the Ring. It's my favorite one of the three.
And
my problem with the Lord of the Rings movies is it's kind of a chore to watch them.
Yeah, and that's
but
why
I did
I put
it at number
10.
I did.
And when I in the course of watching them, I used to think my favorite one was the third one.
Sure.
No, it's the first one because of Gandalf. And honestly, I could turn it off after he falls off the cliff.
Sure.
Falls in the hole because fuck those movies. I like Gandalf.
There's my number 10 is Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, followed by a movie that, honestly, when I saw it, it reminded me of Princess Bride. It was the first movie I'd seen in a long time, and it was the 2007 Matthew Vaughn film Stardust.
I have not seen that. I've heard good things about it.
It is much better than I expected, and it really did remind me of Princess Bride. It's that sort of a lighthearted film.
It's an adaptation of a Neil Gaiman. Comic book and novel.
It's good.
Cool.
It's good. And Mark Strong's in it.
Right the fuck on. I like Mark Strong.
Exactly. It's one of the first things I remember seeing him.
Yes, it also has Robert De Niro in drag. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Great. Stardust 2007, that's the most recent movie that shows up on this list, and then I'm back into the 80s. 1984 film The Neverending Story pops in at my
almost
number,
thought about it.
My number 8. My number 7's 86 film Labyrinth.
And then
we get into Dragon Slayer is my number 6, number 5 Adventures of the Baron Munchausen, number 4 The Dark Crystal, number 3 Willow, number 2 Lady Hawk, and number 1 Flight of Dragons.
Ah, shit, my iPod just died.
Sweet.
Excellent. Nice. All right, Noah, what's your list?
My rundown is as follows. At number 10 I had Conan the Barbarian, number 9 was The Dark Crystal, number 8 was Lady Hawk. Number 7 is I just kind of lumped them all together. Was the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
Sure.
I threw them in there because I did like them.
I thought they were good. I think Ethan nailed it. They were a chore to watch.
They still are. Well, I mean, I own them, but it's like, I watch them maybe once every year and a half, two years,
and I don't feel I need to own them because everybody fucking
owns
them.
Who has 32 hours to sit back and watch these movies?
I don't.
See, now here's the funny thing. I've never bothered.
Never bothered what?
Seeing the extended versions.
Oh, really? I watched those like when they came out, especially The Return of the King, because they put Christopher Lee back into it. I wanted to see what was up with that.
They're good, but if you got 3.5 hours or to watch a movie, watch Seven Samurai.
There you go. Or watch a movie you haven't seen.
Or watch two movies you haven't seen.
Yeah, roll the dice and see, watch something that you have not seen.
Lord of the Rings trilogy. Number 6 was Dragonheart. 5, Willow. 4 was the Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. 3 was The Black Cauldron. 2 was How to Train Your Dragon. And 1 was Princess Bride.
Cool. Well, on my list, I'm going to try to do it by memory, but I don't remember the year or the director because I had it written down, but I forgot it. My number 10 was it was the Final Fantasy VII Advent Children. It was a spinoff of Final Fantasy VII.
2005.
I enjoyed that movie a lot, but obviously that was tied to the fact that I loved Final Fantasy VII, and if you didn't like it, then the movie wouldn't mean shit
to you. Go back to early Red Phone Zone for that.
Oh, I forgot.
We did a casting couch of it.
I got a third fucking episode we ever...
It was the first one
you did.
Yeah, so it was the second episode.
It was the second episode. Yeah. My number 9...
Paul Bettany is Sephiroth.
Yeah, and Shay cast himself as Cloud.
The Blu-ray edition was, like, so much better, too.
I had it on Blu-ray, and it got removed from my custody.
Yes.
But that was my number 10. My number 9 was the Joe Dante film Gremlins 2, The New Match. I like it better than the first
one.
It's
such a cheesy ass movie.
I mean, I like the first one plenty, but I like the second one better.
Much better. Second was always better.
My number 8 was the Danny Boyle film, A Lifeless Ordinary. It actually dealt with angels and shit, and it was weird, and I enjoyed it.
It's been a long time since I saw that one.
Yeah, it was a good one. My number 7 was Dragon Slayer, the Matthew Robbins film. And then my number 6 was Conan, my number 5 was The Hobbit, my number 4 was Legend, my number 3 was Willow, my number 2 was The Hudsucker Proxy. My number 1 favorite fantasy film of all time was The Princess Bride, the 1987 Rob Reiner film. So, that brings an end to our fantasy films list. Stay tuned, we're going to be right back with our outro section. And that was our discussion on fantasy films, as I predicted, which isn't, too soothsayery of me. We did have 3 pretty different lists. Although, we did kind of have a through line of the 1980s, which apparently the 1980s was the time to be a fantasy film.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you look at it, it really was. I mean, there were a lot of good fantasy films in that period.
And there were some real fucking terrible ones, too.
Oh, sure.
Well, that's
sure.
Although I think if you include the sci-fi original movies now, there are a fuck ton more terrible ones.
Oh, God, yes. There's been some really bad fantasy movies since Lord of the Rings come out.
Yeah.
And first and foremost on my list is Aragorn, because
sure.
That just really let me down, because I liked that book quite a bit.
Yeah, I never read the book. I saw the trailer for the movie. It's like, oh, that looks interesting. And then enough people were like, it is shit. See it not.
Well, when the book came out, they were touting it as the next Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And the first book was excellent. And the second book, I could not get more than like 75 pages into it because it's so boring. And I guess there's more, and I don't care.
Yeah, I think there's three or four books now.
And it was too
bad. I guess
bad.
We also got the Golden Compass, which people...
Come to think of it, you know, the Narnia books didn't show up, or movies didn't show up on any of our lists.
I've never seen any of them.
I saw the first one, and I didn't like the books.
Yeah, so neither did I. So
that
I
doesn't
really know.
That doesn't help much. Movie, so.
I will say that the one movie that even beats out Aragorn, hands down, Dungeons and Dragons.
The sequel was better. It's still terrible, but the sequel was better. The direct-to-DVD sequel. The Wrath of the Dragon God or something, or whatever they ended up calling it. Yeah, it's...
The first movie's awful.
The second movie, much, much better. There's a third one coming out, you know.
Yeah.
Why?
Dungeons & Dragons 3D.
It's the same team who did the second movie.
Why?
A sci-fi original film.
Awesome.
The Book of Vile Darkness.
I can't wait to not see that.
Wait!
Yep. Dungeons & Dragons, The Book of Vile Darkness.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
See, I can say this about the second movie, though, is they at least got the universe right. They at least had the dragons right. They at least had the monsters right.
What, they weren't brainless idiots?
There weren't beholders wandering around with guards.
Look, a beholder, anyway.
The dragons actually seemed relatively intelligent, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
But... Yeah.
Hey, there's no Reign of Fire on our list either.
Oh, I know. No Reign of Fire.
Imagine that.
No Red Sonja. No Star Chaser, The Legend of Orin.
Did you ever watch that?
Nope.
Thought you were gonna.
I was. Then I
Then you
care.
Got to know Shay a
and
little
bit. I was
better.
Like, wait, this is Shay's fate. No, I can't watch this movie. And there's Red Sonja. Yeah. Red Sonja was technically the third Conan movie.
Kind of, sort of.
Although he's Barbarian King.
Arnie's Barbarian King.
Because they didn't want to pay the rights for Conan.
Well, I got to tell you, Noah, it's been a pleasure having you back, and you are much more knowledgeable about fantasy films than you were about Westerns, so that's good.
Yes, I hopefully have much, much better acquitted myself this time than I did last time.
Yeah, sounds like you chose the right
genre
for you.
Yeah, you were a pleasure then, you're a pleasure this time, too.
Yeah, and
well, it's been a pleasure being on, because, yeah, I like talking this stuff with you guys.
It was a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll have you on. Maybe when you're up in Kansas, we'll have you on for a live show if there's time. We'll see
probably
what happens.
Yeah.
Probably
not.
never time. But hey,
yeah, but anyway.
But until that happens, you know, it's good having you on. Maybe we will have you on in the future, even if it is over Skype.
Yes, well, thank you, guys.
Well, do you have anything else to add, anybody?
I do not.
Noah?
Nah, I'm good.
Well, thank you for being on, and until next time, I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
Let your geek flag fly.